Hello everyone, I'm having a conversation with Davis Arini. You may know him from doing the Sarkeesian Effect documentary, which I will put a link to in the description after this, but you can probably also find by the link that's in the description to his channel, which you should check out, and possibly from the legendary video of him playing Kane from Command & Conquer, which I totally recommend. That was a brilliant video. How are you doing?
That was actually a lot of work, getting the little animated thing in the upper right-hand corner. That was about 2 hours of just... Like, I wasn't properly animating, you understand. I'm not an animator. What I was doing was creating a bunch of still images and putting them in a row, which I guess is animating, but I wasn't using Flash or anything cool like that.
Honestly, it came across that I really could tell that a lot of work had gone into that. It was a really great recreation. It really was.
It was fun. Yeah. I wanted to show people. Hey, like this was when I was doing the getting the votes to do the short film "Lust in the Time of Heartache." I wanted to show people that even though my YouTube videos are really basic, it's really just a camera, a little bit of color balancing, some little bit of set design, a little bit of like I can do more than that. You know, like these videos do not tax me to make. You know, I spend 20 minutes in the editing booth.
Thing is, I think that's actually a really good format for what you do, because you're talking ideas, and when you're talking ideas, you really don't want. Well, I mean, at least I personally wouldn't want flashy gimmicks and things, you know, moving around on the screen that are going to distract the viewer from what you're actually trying to say. You know, that's for the peasants, you know, the people who can't really think and can't focus for more than 10 minutes, you know what I mean?
It's a fine balance that you have to find. And now, like I spoke to you before the show, I've been kind of in the back of my head thinking about ways that I can improve my channel because, like this, quite frankly, the amount of flack that Jordan and I are taking for even attempting this documentary, it's strategically changing my position in life. It's hard enough trying to get a job at a corporation if you've ever written anything about feminism. When you have media comparing you to ISIS, you're dead. So it's changed a lot of what my direction is going to be. So I'm reevaluating stuff, trying to come up with ways that I can improve my channel with a little bit of polish, but not unnecessary flash, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a perfectly reasonable way of putting it. Perfectly reasonable. So how are things going with the Sarkeesian effect at the moment, then?
Well, at this point... Now, see, our initial goal was... $15,000. And let me tell you, making movies is expensive. It is really, really expensive. And at this point, we are just nosing up on the $6,000. But it's decent. And we've been computing the numbers. We've been looking at the, you know, like hotels, flights, the fact that we have to pay rent and our bodies require food, you know, like that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, this is the metaphor that I like to use. It's like we're driving down the highway and we're pretty sure there's a gas station before we run out of gas on all of this.
Yeah, I can feel you there. I'm working on Necromancer still, and yeah, I know exactly how you feel.
This film is the right thing to do. You know, I don't know who said this, but it was a mathematician talking about how when he saw a mathematical proof that was correct, he could just tell. Before he checked it, he could tell this is the correct proof because it's beautiful. And when Jordan brought up this idea to me, two or three months ago, it just snapped in my head that, yes, this is the right thing to do. You know, like, everybody's been making these videos criticizing Anita's arguments, and nobody cares. She's still getting hired at EA. Nobody cares what anybody does on the internet. Documentary, this is a game changer. I am sick of these fallacious arguments being presented as if they're valid. and this is how we change things. And even right now, like, it's going to be shoestring. It's going to be us calling in favors. It's going to be difficult. We're going to have to do magic with nothing. But I've done magic with nothing before, and it's the right thing to do. Like, I know it's the right direction to go. So, obviously, if we can get more funding, that is awesome. But the other thing, too, is once we do this, once we get the initial steps, we can show people what we're doing. Hopefully, we can overcome a lot of the skepticism that we're running into with people.
Okay, I take it you guys are doing this as a full-time job at the moment, then?
Pretty much. It will be, to do something like this, it does have to be a full-time commitment. Like, I'm going to be in the States for about three or four weeks. I forget. Jordan's doing most of the scheduling. Thank God, I'm terrible at scheduling. But, yeah, I'm going to be in the States for 3 weeks, you know. Going to spend a week sleeping on his sofa. that sort of stuff. So it is going, like, there's other stuff I'm doing at the same time, but all of that's going on the back burner.
Right, okay. That's good to hear.
There's a great question in the comments section that I'd like to address right off the bat. It's by Shefarius. How is this a game changer? And that is that is the perfect question, because, you know, Shefarius, Sargon, we are reasonable people. If you provide us information and it's well written or well spoken, you know, it has a modicum of it's smooth going down, we will accept that information. We will embrace it. You know, if I present you a logical argument demonstrating that Anita's arguments are garbage, you'll say, oh, well, that's a really good point. Most people don't work that way.
Yeah, I think it's, it's almost just the internal consistency of the argument. You know, if it doesn't contradict itself and it doesn't make any unreasonable assumptions, then, you know, there's no reason that you wouldn't accept this argument on the face of things. And it's, you know, like anything else, it's completely subject to reinterpretation or reanalysis later. You know, if the facts change, you change the argument, obviously. But if you're presenting an argument that's not got a problem to it and the facts don't appear like they're going to change overnight, then of course, you know, I think any reasonable person would accept that as a point of view. And I think you're absolutely right that these people don't. They're not interested in doing that at all.
Well, and it's not just the prominent social justice warriors that we're talking about. We're talking about people in general. Was it Thomas Jefferson that talked about the natural aristocracy?
I'm actually not sure.
I think I'm getting it wrong, and I apologize. Normally, I like to look stuff up before I quote people, but here's the thing. Like, the rational people, first of all, it's people that really are committed to truth, looking into things, that they are a minority. Second of all, most people don't have the time to look into this. Most people either don't play games, or they only play games part-time, or whatever. And showing them the larger picture of all of this is very difficult. And so a YouTube video, that will convince thinking people. It's not going to show up on Wikipedia, however. Yeah. The news media will dismiss. Right now, they are dismissing all criticism of Anita, primarily because it's just on the internet. You know, the Supreme Court in the U.S. has recognized bloggers as journalists, but the media hasn't.
That's because the bloggers are a direct threat to the media. Why would they? That's the last thing they'd want to do.
Well, exactly. There's no official criticism of Anita Sarkeesian. Nobody who matters has criticized her. But a documentary, even though, you know, we're going to have an hour and a half. Do you think we're going to be able to include the same depth of analysis on individual arguments as Thunderfoot with his hours and hours of videos that he's put together? Like, we're going to interview him. Him speaking will make up maybe 10 minutes of the documentary. You know, he has a lot to say, and we're going to cram it into 10 minutes. No, this is not going to be as intellectually deep. But because it's a documentary, all of a sudden it's real. This is why these people were flipping out. You know, like, I've made videos criticizing Anita Sarkeesian before. There weren't emails to the company I was working for trying to get me fired. There weren't people decrying me as a member of ISIS for making a YouTube video. All of a sudden, I've been deposed.
Just to ask that, so has the company you work for been sent emails as a personal attack against you?
I specifically recused myself from the company before starting this. I finished off the projects I was working on and said that, listen, this is dangerous territory. You know, I don't want you guys to be involved in this. I know I'm going to get a lot of personal attacks, so I'm recusing myself.
Right, okay.
But yeah, despite that, there have been emails. And there's a lot of other stuff as well. I'm not going to go into details. Because a lot of it is people who are afraid. You know, it's... I can't think of any specific examples because I don't watch sports, but there's always some sports commentator that has hours and hours and hours of commentary, and then one day he says something that they call offensive, and he gets fired from his job. That's not because his bosses are evil, it's because they're afraid. Yeah. And there are people that are afraid, and that's affected me in my personal life, but I don't want to tell those stories because the people that let me down are not evil, they are afraid. They're not villains.
Yeah. I think that's a very mature way of looking at it as well, because I think it's true. You know, and the thing is, I can understand why some people do become more suspicious of them, because the result to the person is evil. You know, the other person, you know, should show a great strength of character and say, look, you know, that's, you know, I need to investigate this, and, you know, they should take it responsibly. And so I think it's easy for it to look like it's an act of evil, you know, like it's done with malice. Whereas I think you're absolutely right. I think it is all just coming from a place of fear.
You know what? You shouldn't judge another person's life. Like if they go and screw you over, then, you know, go enact the law, go execute justice. Mm-hmm. But you know, you don't know what somebody else is going through. Somebody else has a family to feed. Whatever. Somebody else just had their mother just died, and they're not up to the emotional stress of receiving this sort of bullying right now. Maybe you don't trust them as much in the future, but you shouldn't be. The social justice warriors are the ones that play either you're with me or you're against me.
They're
I don't play that game.
Aren't they? They are absolutely absolutist. I'm just going to plug some headphones in because I think there's a bit of an echo coming back that's causing it to flip the pictures. I thought it was almost fixed, but it doesn't seem to be. 2 seconds, sorry about that.
I'll do the same on my end. And this will probably completely screw up the call, and then we'll have to restart it or something.
Probably.
Testing, testing.
Okay, I think I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and there is no echo. Awesome.
Fantastic. Right. Hopefully that's better for everyone. You bunch of whinging gits. So what is your take on Gamergate generally? Have you been following it, or how much have you been following it?
Now, I do not want to claim to be an expert, simply because there is so much information coming out of Gamergate. And you know what, like Kotaku, I spotted them as a bunch of Marxist, social justice warrior, non-video game playing lies and garbage like a year ago, and I generally try and avoid that sort of toxicity in my life and read something positive. Hmm. So, I do not know the people that write for Kotaku, because I read them like a year or two ago, and it was garbage, so it's like, done with it, I don't need to read this.
I'm with you. I as soon as I realized they had a tag called feminism, I was done. You know, just no. There's absolutely no reason that they need that. You know, that was the clincher. But
now that said, I frequently tend to understate my expertise on things because I'm aware of how much I don't know. I have been keeping very close tabs on Gamergate. I'm planning to actually write an article for people that haven't been about what's going on with Gamergate. I do not know all the details, and there's a decent chance I'll get something mixed up.
Well, that's fine. How about, do you want to just tell us a few of the details you do know? I mean, because like you said, one of the problems, and this is something I'm having a trouble with, is there is so much going on, and there are so many different people, different groups, who really don't have much intersection. They don't really interact much, and then now everyone is having to deal with everyone else. Because suddenly we all find ourselves on the same, I suppose it's an ideological side of this.
I would say it's an anti-ideological side. But
well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, the story of Gamergate, from my view, mm-hmm. is that for a long time now, for a couple of years, there's been this progressive infiltration of tech and video game circles by people that are they're ideological flag wavers. You know,
if I could just inject there, I wouldn't just say it's tech and gaming. I would say it's almost every aspect of society.
Oh, this is just the latest. You know,
yeah,
if
exactly.
you want a progressive stack destroying academia and censoring research, this is the same thing, except they won that battle.
Yeah,
they
that's actually something I'm going to be doing quite a large video on, because I've been doing a lot of research into this, and my God, it's scary, you know. And their peers are just like, "What are you talking about? All of this is faulty. This doesn't make sense." And they're constantly justifying themselves to their peers, and this is from their own blogs and forum posts and stuff like that.
When you can find quotes of people talking about organizing to take over academia and push a specific ideology, that's not a conspiracy theory. Okay, when you can show they mentored these people who became leaders in the anti-sex feminist movement in the 70s. You know, that's not a conspiracy. But because they own academia, academia doesn't talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. No,
you're right. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, we actually have evidence of conspiratorial actions. You know. We actually have hard evidence of this sort of thing, and it's the thing is, I don't even know if it's reasonable to call this a conspiracy anymore, because it's more a giant, it's more the culture, it's just the ideology. As soon as they say to each other, "Oh, I'm a progressive," "Yeah, I'm a progressive too," you can see they just walk in lockstep. You know, it's like they've all trained to goose step somehow in their minds, and now as soon as you mention, right, and then they're on the same wavelength, they know exactly what they're both fighting for. And they know that the people who aren't fighting for that same thing are the enemy. You know, it's so obvious, and so it's no surprise that they would collude so intensely. You know,
it's frightening, and
yeah.
The reason Gamergate matters to me, the reason it matters so much to me, is because, like, the tech and video game circles are new, and for a long time they were left alone because you needed to actually do math to get involved in this. and these people hate doing math.
Yeah. They hate work of any kind, really.
So it was left alone. It was organic. It was positive, logical, saying, like, there wasn't any substantial oppression of women. And then they realized this, and now they're trying to infiltrate, but the people doing it are very incompetent. And so what we saw with the Zoe Quinn thing, this is a chink in their armor. Like, I don't care about Zoe Quinn. All right, that's just, she is such a non-story. And, you know, for the most part, so is Sarkeesian. She's mm-hmm. just this manipulative woman trying to scam money by pretending that she's a feminist.
Trying. She's the successful scam artist in gaming. Trying, bloody hell. She is the queen of scam artists, and they are never gonna admit that she scammed them. They can't, and all she'll do is just keep feeding them the bollocks they want to hear, and they will just throw money at her. They will just throw it. I wish I could do what she did. I'd be doing so well.
Well, I really imagine, like, if Feminist Frequency hadn't taken off, and this is completely speculative thinking, but like this has happened before with other people. Internet Aristocrat has covered some of this, where these people will throw up Kickstarter after Kickstarter after Kickstarter, playing some sort of victim angle, until one gets popular and they make a ton of money off of people that over some manufactured nonsense.
Yep. Feel sorry for this person, give them money, and don't ask questions.
But, you know, this is something that's been going on for a while. And everybody has kind of been noticing, you know, that that Adria Richards, or is it Adrian Richards? I forget.
I think it's Adria Richards, the Donglegate one.
Yeah, it's, you know, black women saw this and said, well, that doesn't really stand for me. You know, and guys saw this and said, like, I'm sick of women like that turning my office place into a hostile environment. And everybody, like, there's this growing sense that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And the Zoe Quinn thing, it's what tipped the scales. The extent of her hypocrisy, the lascivious nature of the scandal, and absolute incredible amounts of censorship. Like, we all kind of suspected there was some conspiratorial censorship, but when even 4chan is shutting down threads, you know, every magazine, Reddit, and 4chan is
and
shutting
down. And the mainstream media they're getting access to. This is what I've actually long said about Zoe. It's not that she's special, it's just that every single problem that is evident in these people is manifested in her.
Exactly.
You know, the immorality, the censorship, and the trigger for all of them to react as we knew they would when this happened. You know, when a situation like this occurred, everyone could have predicted how they'd react. I mean, maybe not to the extent they'd react. I never thought. I was just unbelievably shocked when 10 articles on the same day came out decrying the word gamer. I was just like, you guys have lost. That is, you know, the moment when they lost this. You know, there is no coming back from that. You have just personally said, well, we walk out of gaming. We're not going to be part of gaming anymore. Why the hell would anyone pay attention to you now? That's insane.
And Game Journal pros, I would love to look through their archives and see if myself and Jordan get mentioned. Because, like we're not... I think we have close to 20,000 subscribers between the two of us, something like that. Like, we're not complete nobodies, but we're not the most popular guys on the internet. And yet, 2 days after we announced this thing, several publications are decrying us as racist, homophobic, sexist, misogynist, ISIS supporters. Are you telling me there wasn't a conspiracy amongst journalists to attack us in this vicious manner?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to think there's a conspiracy at this point? Or is that tinfoil hat?
Absolutely. I mean, we have evidence, solid evidence, of conspiracies amongst their group. More than one, incidentally. But only one really technically counts as a conspiracy because it was done in secret. But the other one, was the Playful is Political, that transcript, is... It's what I picture the Americans expected to find communists doing in the 50s and 60s. You know, these smoky room roundtables where they're sat there going, how can we advance the agenda, comrade, you know? And it literally read like that, and I was just like, right, the only reason this technically wouldn't be a conspiracy is because technically this is public knowledge. You know, I mean, they did advertise this. I mean, the transcript, I think, they tweeted, Adrian Shaw tweeted the transcript about a month before Gamergate really kicked off, or a few weeks before Gamergate really kicked off, and it was deleted at some point, presumably when Gamergate all kicked off, which is presumably why someone was so excited that they'd managed to get a copy of it, and they sent it to me, and they are literally colluding to advance the cause and talking about how there is so much fear in the industry. They should be more afraid, and they're not. And they're, you know, and they're trying to subvert the peer review process and stuff like that. And it's just like, Jesus, these people are insane.
You know, you're asking why this doesn't, why something like that does, even though they're hiding in plain sight, why does nobody talk about this? And there's a great article I read on, like, and good Lord, Return of Kings. It's a website ostensibly about how to get laid, and yet you'll find some of the most piercing and honest journalism out there on that website. Anyway, it was an article saying, why is Michael Moore not making a documentary about what a terrible president Obama is? Like, Obama has completely undermined all the democratic principles he's supposed to do. And the reason is that with something like Bowling for Columbine, the entire American populace, right from grade school, has been prepared to see a documentary about banning guns. And so, as soon as they watch, like, they're primed for it. Whereas making a documentary about Obama, they are primed to see any criticism about Obama as, you hate black people, you're a birther, you think he's a Muslim, so on, so on, so on. So we are primed to hear one narrative. So we're primed to hear the narrative about women being abused. But then when you point out, like if you actually look at the statistics and you find that domestic violence is actually pretty reciprocal, it's about 50-50, like men and women hit one another in bad relationships.
Interestingly, I think it's actually, there was a Telegraph article that was done a while ago about this, that I think 70% of spousal, of reciprocal violence is initiated by the woman. The article was titled Relationship Terrorists, because women provoke, and they go out of the way to provoke, and they can often provoke with violence. And it's one of those things that the feminists could never admit, because it fucks their narrative.
You know, I wasn't going to bring that up, but yeah, it's yes, and this is multiple studies have shown this, about 70% of domestic violence is initiated by women. Now, I'd also like to say, I suspect that's because we have really screwed up domestic violence laws that don't really help actual victims of domestic violence. What they do is they empower the people that would manipulate through violence. The same way, like this latest thing Sarkeesian is on, Believe All Women. If you believe every single woman, like if she says that guy raped me and you believe her unequivocally, all you're doing is empowering the women that lie about being raped. Because, hey, women do bad stuff too. And so now everybody's going to doubt rape claims because the media won't doubt, or won't, not doubt, but like ask reasonable questions.
Yeah, no, I really think that I totally agree with what you're saying, and this is something I personally have said before as well. If, you know, feminists, listen, you keep saying women are people too, and it's like, that's great, I totally believe you, and that means they're just as capable as anyone else of being lying, deceptive, manipulative, you know, they can do all of these things. So, no, I'm not going to just believe you, I'm going to treat you as if a man was saying these things to me, and if a man was saying these things to me, I would be skeptical and then investigate. That's what these questions are, it's not fucking victim blaming, right?
And you know what, speaking of, we're talking a bit about the bit with Jordan Owen was just doing the...
I wanted to talk about that, actually, yeah.
Two things that came up, because I was taking notes during this bloody thing.
No, absolutely, I can understand why you would.
The first thing is, he says, it's one thing to be skeptical of religion, because God doesn't have emotions, it's another thing to be skeptical of a woman.
That's nonsense. God's got plenty of emotions.
He's got plenty of rage. God,
he's jealous shit. He says, I am the jealous God. He wiped out an entire generation of Israelites because they pissed him off. God is psychotic. The last person you want to piss off is God. But this is the thing is, I watched that
here's the implication. If he's saying you can't question women because they have emotions, are you saying that women are so emotionally weak that they can't stand scrutiny? It's like, is this what you're saying? That men are strong and you can question a man, but you dare not question a woman because she's a fragile little flower.
And that is directly what they are saying as well. This believe a woman thing, it's just like, look, Anita, you don't understand that I'm never just going to believe someone. You know, I'm always going to see if it, at least even if it's just on the surface, you know, just their story is internally consistent and that it actually reflects reality in some way before I even think about accepting it. And then I might accept it and then think, right, okay, well, I'm going to investigate this further just to make sure, or something like that. Like any normal person, surely, or what I would have thought a normal person would do.
You know, for later on in the conversation, they're discussing the death threats against Sarkeesian, and there are some questions about how she got a screen cap 13 seconds after the last one was tweeted at her when she wasn't
watching. Was this Kevin Dobson?
You know what? I'm not certain.
All right. No, I I have got information on, not information, but I've got the information that she released about Kevin Dobson, which was someone who sent messages saying that he was going to rape her bloody with a pole or something.
Yes, that
Kevin Dobson. That was, yeah, they were all within 3 minutes of each other, and the last one was, yeah, it was about 12 seconds that she screen-capped it from a Twitter account that wasn't logged in. But and most importantly, why would someone register an account with a real name if they were going to send death threats?
Now, and here's the bit that really struck me, again, about the social justice warrior. This demonstrates the childlike thinking, the black and white, simplistic good boy, bad boy morality of these people, where he said to Jordan, what is the implication of that argument? And this guy cannot tell the difference between a question and an argument. You are asking a question. I would like an investigation into this. Anita, how did you get those tweets? 13, you know, explain this to me. I'm not saying we shouldn't protect you. Like, assume that there's danger. The cops should be protecting her if she got death threats. But I've got some questions. But he can't tell the difference between an argument, a statement, and a question. I can question your claim that you got a death threat without arguing that you didn't.
It rather seems that he's projecting onto him. He's inferred an argument without even considering what the answer to the question is. It's an obvious way of avoiding having to honestly analyze the question. Because he's looking for an agenda within it. And if just merely asking the question has an agenda, then that obviously means that there's an answer. He knows that there's an answer that's going to severely damage his worldview.
Well, every question he asks has an agenda. Yeah, another bit of the simplistic thinking is where they're talking about the strip club level in Hitman, and he said, Jordan points out that you don't actually have to go into the dressing room with the strippers. That's just, it's part of the environment, but there's no reason to go there. There's no reason to kill the strippers. And he responded, you're invited into that dressing room. Because it's there, you're invited. Like, I don't have the self-control. Like, you're allowed to. It reminds me of these religious fundamentalists who say, that I would rape and murder people if God didn't make it illegal.
Yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely. This is what I mean when I say projection. It's like, no, that says more about you. That was your thought. You know, that wasn't my thought. My thought was never, maybe I should sneak into a room and kill some strippers, even though there's no benefit for me doing so, and it's just a hassle and a waste of bullets, probably, you know? But in their mind, there is an opportunity for mischief of some kind. I will take it because there's nothing to stop me. And
they want to be told what to do and controlled all the time. Like, this is he's saying any video game that gives you freedom. Like, back in the days of Ultima 8, I made a mini game out of trying to kill NPCs, like major NPCs, because the game was set up to try and make it impossible that you instantly get murdered by the town sorcerer if you murder anybody. And so it was a challenge to try and break the game. You know, I'd set up bombs and surround somebody, then run far enough away that the town sorcerer wouldn't notice me. And it was hilarious because a lot of these people didn't have death animations. They'd just be frozen like this for the rest of the game.
I have to say, I just want to... Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I was just checking whether it was the one I played. And Ultima 8 is the ultimate game I actually played, and I adored that game.
Apparently, absolutely, it was one of the worst. Until Ultima 9 completely shit the bed. Ultima 8 was supposedly terrible, and I loved it, which makes me want to play 7.
Well, if I recall correctly, this is, we're talking quite a few years ago now, but I'm sure I did go back and try the other Ultima games, and I could not get on with them at all. They were too different to Ultima 8.
It's the evolution of the technology. I argue that System Shock 1 is far, far superior to System Shock 2, but it's basically unplayable nowadays because it was right in between the Doom games where it was completely keyboard controlled and you didn't have strafing. You had left turn, right turn, move forward, or hit control and A and then you strafe. And it was before the mouse controlled FPSs, and it tried to be a new type of FPS. Mm-hmm. But controls are just so bizarre that it's bloody near unplayable at this point. Like, I recommend it. It's great, but if you can't play it, I don't blame you.
I managed to get a copy of Doom a few years ago, about, I don't know, 12 years after I last played it. And one of the things that I couldn't believe is how slow it was. Everything was so slow. The the imps and their fireballs. They'd fire a fireball and you just watch it approach and then just take a sidestep and watch it fly past and be like, how did they ever hit me? But like you said, it was the controls. It was all about the controls, because this was one where you could have a free mouse look. It was Arena, rebooted version or something. The controls.
That breaks the game. Yeah, there's a new version of System Shock 1 where you can do the mouse movement, and the game's not hard enough now.
Yeah.
It's like you need those crippled controls to have the true experience.
Yeah, and that's exactly the problem. Not the problem, but exactly the reason that I actually haven't been back to play Doom, because I did absolutely love Doom, but it just doesn't work when you've got more freedom to, do what you want to do.
To imagine people were calling these things killing simulators back in the day.
Oh, there's an interesting thing. Since the year 2000, as in the rise of the first-person shooter, there's been a noticeable decline in gun crime and murders. There still are gun crime and murders, but it's, and I'm not necessarily saying that correlation implies causation, but I mean, if there are less people on the streets causing trouble, and they're all playing first-person shooters instead, that's, as an outlet for what would have been the otherwise, normal teenage male, feeling of wanting to cause trouble, then, isn't that surely a better thing,
You know what, I think that if games had any effect, any negative effect, we would see it in driving. Because when you drive in Grand Theft Auto, you are completely ignoring. You're just a frickin' maniac, and I get so frustrated with I love road rage. Okay, I don't lose control. I have fun with it. Like I can road rage at somebody for a good half hour without repeating myself or I usually yell at them if they need to go to church.
And you haven't run anyone down or gone on a killing spree yet? Is that what you're telling me? Because I don't believe you.
I'd say if it had any sort of negative effect, we would see more stupid driving stunts in traffic killing people.
My God, it would be everywhere. How many billions is the gaming industry worth now? Didn't Grand Theft Auto make a billion on its first day? And it would be everywhere.
People don't take their cars off of sweet jumps. Yeah, unless they're like, I'm half country, half city. Country boys have always taken their cars off of sweet jumps. I've taken my car off a few sweet jumps, but in the country, not in downtown traffic.
Exactly. It's under surprisingly controlled circumstances.
One time I was skidding on gravel towards a ditch, so I downshifted to second in midair and hit the ground and climbed up at 45. Did a 270 and up the driveway. That was a fun night.
I reconsider my controlled circumstances comment.
Empty road in the middle of nowhere at night. It's not in the middle of traffic.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would see some sort of effect from all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's too pervasive, it's too ubiquitous. There's no way that so many people can be playing games, so many hours of games, being played, so many hours, and yet, crime rates are at an all-time low. If you look at crime rates since the 70s, they've been on a steady decline of all kinds. And the feminists are getting more and more hysterical over the tiny, the relatively tiny numbers of crimes that are going on. And I mean, maybe it is social media. Barack Obama the other day said social media is making the world fall apart because everyone thinks it's a lot worse than it is. And maybe he's right. Maybe that's not total bullshit for once.
Well, you know what? If there's any redeeming factor in Bowling for Columbine, it's the pointing out that the American news is extremely... It feeds paranoia. You know, every storm is the worst storm in history. You know, it's constant panic, constant be afraid, be fearful.
Yeah, this, I tell you, ISIS doing my head in, and not because of who they are or what they are, you know. I'm not surprised, you know. I'm genuinely not that surprised that something really monstrous has sprung out of Mesopotamia. It's not the first time in history, you know.
A Middle Eastern war? What?
Yeah, I know. Who could have imagined that?
And you know what? Here's the thing. And for the record, even though like I'm right-leaning, conservative, I was against the Iraq war from day one.
Yeah, it was obviously bollocks. It was obviously bollocks.
Like, Afghanistan, yeah, that's where Osama was hanging out. Yeah. Iraq did not like Afghanistan. They were not buddies. Iraq had F all to do with it.
Yeah. They had a lot to do with America, though, didn't they?
Ooh, didn't they? And, yeah. You know, I could have, quite frankly, anybody that knows even the tiniest little bit about Middle Eastern history, especially the past 100 years, could have said that this Iraq war is going to wind up with something like ISIS happening.
Yeah.
Either we're going to be there for 50 years. Actually, it doesn't. I don't even think it matters. We could have been there for 50 years, and at the end of 50 years, ISIS would have popped up.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think a Western solution is possible. You know, I don't think.
Well, not a mod. Listen, if you want to go, you know, if you want to, listen, we don't have any problems with worshippers of Moloch anymore. All right, the Romans knew how to deal with a culture that was that different. And if you're not willing to turn the Middle East into a giant glass sea with nuclear radiation, then maybe you should leave it alone.
I agree. I think that there are natural internal forces that will rise to the top. And unfortunately, at the moment, the most extreme and evil of these natural forces has prevailed. And it's because the moderate natural forces haven't been given any kind of voice. I mean,
You know what? I just want to give a shout out to Distant Left in the comments, who points out that Osama was in Pakistan, and that's they, true. You know, and they're an American. You're completely right. You are bang on. This, like, we could go on for hours about the political nonsense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Freaking joke. This whole thing. There are no victory conditions. You do not go into a war without victory conditions. Otherwise, how do you know when you win?
One of my fundamental problems with all of this as well is, I mean, Bin Laden was, I think, a mile and a half from a Pakistani military base. And I'm thinking, you know, and he was in an enclosed compound, high-walled. He hadn't been out in 4 years. He sounds like a prisoner, you know. He sounds like he was a goddamn prisoner. And one of the things that really bothers me is that everyone takes the official story at face value. And I just want to say to them, what do you think the CIA get paid for? What do you think Mossad get paid for? What do you think the Pakistani intelligence agencies get paid for? They get paid to do under-the-table political shit just like this. You know, finding Bin Laden in a compound, a secure compound near a Pakistani military base, you know, in the country next to the one that he's supposed to be in, is incredibly suspect. You know, it isn't. If I was looking at this from, like, in 500 years in the future, and I was a historian, I didn't care about any of these, or something 500 years ago, and I saw these coincidences, I would automatically assume that they had something to do with it. You know, it's so strange to assume that the mainstream media is just telling the truth on this, and they're absolutely on point. You know, even if they're not lying, and even if they're just wrong, you know, that doesn't change the fact that they're wrong.
You know, to get back to video games, and to continue this conversation with video games. In Civ 5, one of the things I love is that in the God and Kings expansion pack, you get ideologies, starting with the Industrial Revolution. And
do you want to tell us a bit about those? Because I've only got normal Civ 5. I don't have the expansion. And I personally want to hear more about them, and I think it might be useful for people listening to.
Well, I'm actually thinking I'm going to do a full socio-political analysis of this, because the guys behind Civ, Sid Meier's brilliant. But the freedom ideology the primary tactic that you have is undermining other countries' sovereignty by putting an agent in that country to rig the election so that they become your ally. You like the stuff that's going on in the Ukraine right now.
Absolutely.
The official news is from an American created and subsidized news company. The unbiased news is dictated by the American foreign policy. That's basically what you do in Civ 5 as the freedom ideology.
That is unbelievably astute. I'm actually going to be... There are three things I'm going to be doing quite in-depth videos about in the near future. The first is the American police force and where it's going. The second is ISIS and what's going on. Because, just to interrupt myself here, I watched a Young Turks video the other day, and Cenk was saying how Saudi Arabia flipping to ISIS from America was, quote, the most likely outcome. He thinks that the Saudi monarchy is going to join ISIS.
What the fuck is he thinking? Somebody wrote an article back when I was a master. It was just for the student paper, but somebody wrote this article hating George Bush and saying that Canada should ally with Iraq so that they'll protect us from the Americans.
That's about on point. That's about the equivalent.
This is the people that we have going to university, and you wonder why the world's screwed up?
I don't. I'm fully aware of why, because they're all idiots. They are all idiots. What, to a man, either they are all lying and doing this maliciously, or I attribute it to stupidity rather than malice. And I have to attribute it to stupidity, because I don't think even people who are being malicious would think that would fly. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Russia Today put out an article saying, look, and with photos of these walls and fences and watchtowers facing Iraq, because they didn't want militants just wandering across the desert into Saudi Arabia. I don't blame them, you know. Just the very idea of Saudi Arabia suddenly flipping to ISIS is...
You know, like, the Saudis are assholes. The Saudis are assholes, but at least they're halfway civilized.
Yeah, no, they know which side their bread's buttered on, you know, and they know,
They treat the temporary workers like shit,
yeah.
You know, like any, like they're, oh god, a big, there's like a substantial industry of North American and European girls going there to be, like, basically high-paid call girls, and they don't get treated very well, but it's like, what were you expecting to happen, you know? You know, like, at least they have roads. They have, you know, buildings.
Yeah, they're not a bunch of fucking, you know, desert hut dwellers these days. You know, they're actually a surprisingly wealthy country with thousands of the royal family that would all be overthrown if they joined ISIS.
Last thing they want is Islam, like, is a powerful Islamic state. They're a bunch of cynical capitalists just like we are. They have a bunch of bastards running corporations just like we do.
Yeah, exactly. Who do they think they're going to sell their oil to if they join ISIS? I mean, it's just such a... And as if they think, oh, well, the Americans just... Well, they take that sort of thing lying down, don't they? They don't send across battle fleets and invasion forces. When has the American Empire ever done that? You know, it's such a laughable thing to have said. And he says it with such severe, sincere conviction. I'm just like, that is just batshit insane. If you think that, you are mental, you know?
Okay, and you know what? This goes back to something you were saying earlier about kind of how so many people are involved in Gamergate. And this is why. Because, like, the mainstream media has been such a laughingstock. It's been so absurd. And whether you are, like, whether you're liberal, Republican, whatever you are, you watch CNN, you watch Fox, and you know, this is a load of crap. Yeah. And so what's happened is the internet has allowed us to start communicating. And so kind of like my background would mainly be with the manosphere. Mm-hmm. And like when you get right down to it, like the manosphere is just frank talk about what it means to be a man and how to get laid. It's not about abusing women. It's about how it's frank talk, but it's not hateful speech. You know.
Yeah, I think it's just. I mean, I don't really. I've never done any of the sort of PUA stuff, but I've been on the MGTOW forums, and most of them are just guys who are pissed off about the way they've been treated out or in the greater real world.
And there's some of them that are angry because they just got divorced, but yeah, it's
but
not...
But these are all reasonable things to be angry about. That's
exactly.
The thing. You know, this isn't irrational. This is a completely logical response to the way they've been treated by society at large, which is actually acting irrational these days. You know?
Then you've got the atheists. I think... I don't want to speak for him, but I would think that that's pretty much Jordan's background. Now, atheists, you know, 50 years ago, atheists are these evil, subversive, whatever. Modern atheism is really, it's a philosophical, scientific analysis, because, like, religion has just collapsed. Religion is a bunch of people screaming, my Bible, like, theology is dead, we killed God 200 years ago, da-da-da-da-da. They're not bad people, they just want to have a conversation, and they look at the stupid debates happening in the mainstream, and they're like, I don't know. And so what Gamergate is doing is that all of these people, we've kind of all these groups have formed, right? And we haven't been speaking to each other.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden with Gamergate, we realize that, like, even though, like, we disagree with each other, like, I tend to lean towards beliefs that are very close to Catholicism. So I disagree with atheists, but they're not my enemies. They're not trying to hurt me or shut me down or destroy my life or any of that stuff.
I totally agree on that point. And that's one of the things that I think is why a lot of these groups haven't really been aware of each other, because they're groups that are just, they just want to get on with what they're doing. They don't want to hurt anyone. They don't want to infiltrate anyone's group or, you know, they don't want to get in other people's shit. They just want to do their own shit and be left alone. You know,
let's put it this way. I'm sure there's women groups. I know there's rational feminists out there.
Oh, and Christina Summers. Boom.
Exactly.
You know, her example.
Trying to get a hold of her for the documentary.
Oh, good. She is so amazing. I'm happy to ask her to join you on that one.
Camille Paglia. That's another one. She is brilliant. And I'm sure there's groups of women, because as toxic as the dating culture is for men, it's mm-hmm. just as toxic for women.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
It's, they've
fed off each other, you know. They've created a culture where, you know, men, they don't necessarily commit to men, they don't expect anything of men. And therefore men have just become cynical and gone, okay, well, we won't expect anything. And so any person on either side of the fence who is expecting something has got a high chance of dating someone who isn't.
No, I'm not a Catholic, by the way. I've never been confirmed. I'm still technically an atheist, just not a very good one. Anyway, so these girls, hypothetically, like, I don't know which groups they'd be, but they see the Manosphere and they see one guy yells, all women are whores!
Yeah.
And really, that's a guy that just got divorced because his wife cheated on him. He's angry and justifiably so, but they see that voice, and they think the whole thing is just, like, anger and nonsense, when really it's a bunch of guys saying, hey, marriage is screwed up. You're really going to have to convince me to trust you before I'll trust modern divorce law. You know, it's like, I'm not going to hurt you, but I'm not trusting you as much as I used to.
That's exactly reflected in the marriage statistics. You know, and on every goddamn, you know, Huffington Post and the female section of every major paper, there are articles, dozens of articles, oh, why can't I get married? I'm a really successful woman and no one will marry me. And it's just like, well, you know, have you seen what happens to guys who get married? You know, they you know, younger guys see older guys and the older guys just say, don't ever get married. And, you know, as if they expect that to not have some sort of knock-on effect, especially when you combine that with them saying, we don't need men anymore, we're strong, independent women. We don't need men. Men need to be needed. You know, that's one of the raison d'etres, you know, and that's, in a lot of cases, that's what they think makes a man, is to be selfless and put others before yourself, you know. And all the great male heroes throughout all of history have always been selfless. You know, they started off selfish, they've gone on the hero's journey, and they've come back selfless and working for other people, you know? And
well,
so...
Just to play the sympathetic ear, the women have some valid complaints too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not trying to denigrate what they're saying, you know?
like, can you blame women for divorcing a lot of these men that we have out there? Mm-hmm. It's just that we have this whole system set up that's toxic against everybody, and yet we haven't communicated until Gamergate. It's just amazing that, like, the common
sense... This is the thing that everyone cares about.
It's obvious corruption that's hurting all of us. White, black, man, woman, left, right, we're all pissed off about this, and we finally have something we can come around, put aside our differences for now, so we can have a real argument later. Because these people don't want to have a real argument, they just want to manipulate language and take power.
I totally agree, and the thing is, I really think that gaming is a bit of a meritocracy. In fact, I think it's the best meritocracy I can think of. You know, everyone starts on a level playing field. You know, when you first load up a game, everyone starts in the same position. And it's your own choice, your own judgment, your own skill, your own actions that allows you to be the victor if you are the victor. You know, or in whatever sense. Even if it's just teamwork and cooperation, good teamwork and your own actions allow you to win, or just, you know, solving a puzzle or something like that. It's all about agency. And games are one of those things where it's just agency that wins. You know, it's just your effect and your actions and your choices. Nothing, you know, there are no special favors. You can't have corruption, you know, outside of cheating and hacking and stuff, but they're illegal. You know, they're not part of the game. You know, everyone's within the same set of rules, and it's how you use them which shows your talent. And it's this kind, and I do think that does have a kind of purity to it. You know, you can't corrupt that. You know, you can't corrupt it without being obviously corrupt. You know, there's no way of hiding that, and therefore people are going to be like, no, that's not fair. You know, we'll go back to Quake 3 or something. You know, that, you know, it's that sort of mentality. And I really think it's a universal thing, which is why literally everyone, even no matter what other people do, you know, what hobbies they've got or interests they've got, that is an ideal that I think a lot of people share.
Yeah, and you know, there is so much diversity in the gaming field. Like, at present, women make up, I think, 47% of the gaming marketplace. And, one of the bits...
I just want to address that, because I've actually done a video about that called Lies in the Gaming Press. They do, but it's important to note what they're playing. So it's a very loosely true statistic, because the women who are playing games would never identify themselves as gamers, because most of them... an overwhelming majority of them are playing Farmville and Candy Crush and games like that. You know, also they're playing a lot of point-and-click adventures. And you know, I don't want to in any way make it sound like I don't respect these genres, because I mean they're not for me. But these people are obviously getting a lot out of these genres. They spend money on them. They play them a lot. You know, there's a lot of players. That's great. And this is why they say, oh, there are more 35-year-old women gamers than there are 17 to 25. And it's like, no, there's not. You know, there's just not. My mum is not a gamer, you know, and she plays games. So let's make this distinction. We know that these people aren't gamers. You know, they wouldn't self-identify
as gamers. They aren't gamers. But this does the diversity in the field. One of the BS things that...
Can I just finish a quick point? Sorry, it's just important to round out what I'm saying, because this is the statistic that the social justice warriors use to validate the arguments to change the games that are predominantly male, that are predominantly, and I mean like 80-90% male players. I've got the statistics listed in the sources of that video if anyone's curious about any of this. Because I strongly recommend you check it out, because it's so obvious what they're doing when you can see the numbers. And it doesn't justify it at all. You know, all that justifies them doing is taking control of the Farmville and the Candy Crush games. And I don't even want them doing that. You know, the people playing those games are obviously very happy with them as they are. So don't, you know, if anyone who plays those games is thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm worried about them coming over here, get on board. You can call yourselves gamers, seriously. They are actively not gamers, so don't let them co-opt what you're doing. But I just wanted to finish that off there, because I wanted to make it clear where I stood on them.
Oh, and the, you know, one of the BS things the guy said to Jordan was that the majority of video game protagonists are male. Who's the protagonist in Candy Crush?
Yeah,
there's and do not denigrate those games. I'm not saying you are. I'm saying
they are. Yeah, there's
I was watching an extra credits video on this, talking about the sheer amount of design that you need to put into something like Candy Crush for it not to be a piece of junk. It is. Yeah. You have to really work hard. I don't play those games, but making them interesting, making them engaging, is a lot of work. And there's no protagonist in it.
That's absolutely true. In fact, I've actually spoken to women who do play them, and they don't really know why they enjoy it. They just enjoy the sort of ambience of the game almost. That's kind of how they describe it to me. You know, it's like, I just like the way it looks and the way it plays. And it's like, you know, you can tell that a lot of thought went into that, because, like you say, you can't just, if you knock up something like that, it's going to be shit. You know, I've tried it and it was shit. That's why I never released it. You know, and you can tell Candy Crush is.
Finish.
Oh, I was just going to. They've put a lot of work into it. Sorry, Karen.
Oh, I was saying, I have a friend, video game developer, professional, makes their money this way.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting together a game right now for couples to play with two distinct game modes that are based on hunter-gatherer. You know, like.
That's a great idea.
The two, you can basically boil down the games men like are mainly hunting games. It's the hero's journey, the man fighting the world, whereas the women tend to like the relationship-based games and the gathering games, and this person is trying to combine those two aspects into a single game so they complement each other so couples can play together. And this is a lot of experience making games for both men and women. And I'm not going to mention them because they'll get shit on by the social justice warriors, if I say who it is.
That is a fantastic idea, because I've got plenty of friends who are, you know, they're male and female couples, and they sit in the same room together, and they don't really talk because they're on the computers playing, and one's playing one type of game, and the other is playing another type of game, and they don't really interact. And if they had a game that they were both playing, that they both got equally different things out of, but equal to an equal measure, and if they were cooperating, that would be fantastic, because it would give them something to talk about. I'm thinking, I don't know anything about this, obviously, but I'm thinking that off the top of my head, I would literally have a small settlement, like, not an MMO, well, maybe an MMO, but, you know, in fact, could well be an MMO, where literally they can almost role-play those particular roles. You know, the women can make stuff, they can harvest stuff, they can do the things they like to do in Farmville, and the men can go off killing monsters, and then coming back and then getting resources. You know, so the women are doing it for a reason, you know, like healing potions or something, I don't know. But there's a tangible reason that they do it.
That's the idea of this game.
It's a fantastic idea.
Because it sounds like fun. And there's no rule saying the women have to do these jobs.
Of course. They're just jobs available in the game.
Hey, you know what? I'm a guy. I have a basil plant that I grow, and I like growing plants. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I prefer fixing cars. But I like a bit of gardening, too, even though that's more of a traditionally, like, that's the more gatherer sort of thing. You know, there's no rule saying you have to be one or the other.
I totally agree. This is what I mean about games. No one can stop you doing anything. You know, no one can stop you making a game. No one can stop you playing a game. No one can stop you playing a game how you want to play it, as long as the game allows for it. And, I mean, I used to play it was a Fallout 2 MMO that it was amazing. It was some guys in Poland or Russia or something had basically taken all the art assets from Fallout 2 and then taken all the scripting and then just turned it into an MMO and combined the map of Fallout 1 and 2. So you had the entire map of North America, like the west coast of North America practically. And it was amazing, because you literally form parties with your friends or whoever people around. And then you travel across the world map, and you get into encounters, just like in Fallout. I don't know whether you ever played the Fallout games.
Oh, good. Me, the guy that writes post-apocalyptic science fiction?
I thought you might. But I tell you what, it was amazing.
I actually started writing that book, because at the time it looked like Fallout 3 was never going to happen.
Really?
And so, you know what? I want a post-apocalyptic story, so instead of complaining about it, I'm going to actually write one.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the sort of attitude that I think the social justice warriors should have. But the thing with this game, right, it was really, really brutal. it was totally unforgiving. When you died, you lost everything on your person, and then you reappeared in the wasteland somewhere with nothing. You know, and you had to try, and what you could do is get Brahmin hides and create tents, and then you could save up resources and gold, and then speak to specific characters that were dotted around the world, and purchase hideouts that you and your base could use, you and your group could use, and then you could form factions. So you could go to, you know, you could have wars with other factions, essentially. It was amazing. It's gone down now, and it's gutting. But it was the sort of thing that when you got the faction base and when you started cooperating with other players, you got people fell into very definitive archetypes. I've got one of my friends, he was featured in my slinging video. He's very much we became total communists, you know. All the money was shared, all the resources were shared, everyone trusted each other to be doing the best for the settlement. It was the craziest thing, you know. Private property was just a joke. It's like, no, just, you know, if there are weapons in the weapons locker, because it had a great crafting system as well. You know, you could harvest resources, you could collect stuff, and then you could make weapons, ammo, armor. You chose your specialities, so, you know, I made guns, you know, a friend of mine made energy weapons, another one made grenades, another one made armor. And you end up as this, we ended up as this amazing, efficient communist system where we just had an abundance of resources. Because my friend Scott would go and he just liked grinding and harvesting, you know. And so he'd come back stacked with loads of ore that he'd mined. And then I enjoyed turning into, you know, specific kinds of ammo, making sure we always had enough ammo, making sure we had replacement weapons for when we died and replacement armor. And, you know, I enjoyed managing the inventory. I didn't really enjoy getting the stuff, but he enjoyed contributing by getting the stuff. And it became a really efficient system. And it would be really nice to see something like that occur with, like you said, a couples-based sort of thing where, you know, women primarily get this out of these sort of games. So if you incorporate it into a game that men primarily get what they get out of it, it's a really, really great idea.
You know, actually, you're touching on something else that I've been thinking a lot about lately, is video games and economics. Because the one thing that really strikes me is, like, even though, like, yeah, I'm an Austrian gold standard, rah-rah, that still doesn't really solve the problem of like, when you have, I'm going to try not to get too obscure here, but anytime you have fractional reserve lending, you get inflation, period. That happens.
Yeah. It's designed for it. It's what it does.
Economies almost inevitably lead to a 1% controlling 99%. Time and time and time again, no matter what, we don't have a solution to this. We still don't understand money, and we've had it for, 4,000 years? 5,000?
Not quite that long. 2,700, roughly.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Coinage itself.
Not an expert on everything.
No, it's okay. History's my forte, so...
Well, it's supposed to be my forte, too, but I mostly studied the French Revolution.
Hey, that's a good revolution study. There's a lot of lessons there, you know. A lot of lessons we should be learning right now, you know.
But, you know, thousands of years we've had money, we still don't know how it works. And that, like, these jackasses running the central banks, they don't know how it works either. And yet video game developers, again, going to extra credits, they're talking about the economies of World of Warcraft, for instance. Each time you kill a monster, that adds
money. I saw that episode. Yeah, I saw that episode. It was excellent. In fact, you're absolutely right. But and it's easy to see why. They've got an infinite test arrangement. You know, they can test any kind of system on a lot of people. You know,
and if they fail, they get fired. You know, same thing. Justine Tunney, she's going to be on the documentary, and she's a coder, and her employer doesn't really matter, but like these coders, these like search engines, whatnot. These people are designing a system to regulate millions of people. They're doing basically what the social scientists and bureaucrats are supposed to be doing in social services, except that they screw up, they get fired, and they come up with these amazing products that work wonders, whereas the jackasses in government can't do anything competently, and they make any problem they touch worse.
I tell you, it's a really interesting point that we've hit on this, because the EVE Online one was an excellent example of how it's encouraged that you go to war and destroy property, because that forces people to replace it. And I know it's the breaking the glass window problem, where it doesn't actually increase the economy, but... It's you know, it's a real world aspect that most games with economies leave out, you know, and they, you know, this is the sort of thing that genuinely affects your economy and, you know, it stifles your growth, and it's one of those things that, you know, in the long run probably prevents hyperinflation and stuff like that. And it's like you say, it literally is like a testing ground for concepts for economy. And they've got such huge audiences who are all participating, and it's regulating people, exactly as you say. And there are a lot of good lessons that can be learned.
Yeah, you walk into a DMV, and you just, it's like, you know, these bureaucrats, they'd replace us all with machines if you gave them half a chance, to quote a classic video game. You feel terrible when you're dealing with the government, but these games are, you don't feel terrible except when Steam insists on downloading something you bought off the bloody internet. I hate you, Steam.
It's a great service.
I hate this interweb. I don't like it. I like that. I don't cloud. Keep my stuff on. I've burned everything to 3.5 diskettes.
I tell you what, one thing that I know we're getting off topic, but fuck it. One thing I've always been surprised about, that there's no Steam for movies and TV series.
Isn't there like something...
There's Netflix. Yeah, but that's just streaming, and that can change. You know, they change licenses and stuff. You know, instead of me buying a physical copy of a movie, can't I just buy a digital copy of a movie I can download whenever I want, like with Steam? I mean, that would be... I can't see how that wouldn't make money. You know, how and you think about it, it's just like a famous actor or actress dies and you put their film on discography on half price. Think of the amount of money you're going to make. I know it's cynical, but it's a service that I really would like to see existing, you know?
Yeah, I would attribute that, and I'm just getting water.
No problem. I'm going to get a cup of tea in a second.
Yeah, it really boils down to, I think, the sheer investment needed to have a Hollywood system, because like I mentioned earlier, making movies is expensive. We did Less Than the Time of Heartache. We had a $10,000 budget for that, and quite frankly, we wrote paychecks for ourselves in that, not ungenerous paychecks. By the time we were done, those paychecks were gone.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous.
I've heard from lots of sources that making movies is very expensive.
Very first day, the diner we showed up at, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying anything bad, but like, I don't want to talk shit about people ever. No. But this is what happened was, I guess the owner forgot to mention this to his employees. It just slipped his mind, and then he left, but he forgot his cell phone at the restaurant. And so we get there, and the employees are like, well, we're going home. And so I have to go next door to the neighboring shop and bribe the guy with $50 to stick around long enough to lock the doors when we're done. And it's stuff like that, these incidental, just constant problems.
Yeah, no, I can completely understand. When you entrepreneurship is fraught with difficulties, because fundamentally it doesn't have a system set up to support it. You know, normally when you're working for a big company, you're working within a system that's already established. So I do completely understand how this sort of thing could be an absolute nightmare under the right circumstances, you know?
Yeah, I'm really, one of my pet peeves is people complaining. One of the most frustrating comments I get is, how are you any different than Sarkeesian? First of all, the criticism of Sarkeesian is, for $160,000, she's making well-done YouTube videos. You know, as Thunderfoot pointed out, it's $30,000 a video.
And but you know what? There are also plenty of other criticisms that are completely legitimate as well, you know.
She's being manipulative, it's the tail wagging the dog. Like, that's the real criticism. You know, if she just collected this money and made a bunch of crappy YouTube videos and her idiot fans didn't complain about it, whatever, I didn't contribute anything.
Yeah.
You know,
it wouldn't matter to me at all. Wouldn't matter.
The criticism is not that she made money. There is nothing wrong with making money. And but these people, they're so cynical, and they think that 15 grand is a lot, like per month, filming a bloody documentary.
I actually had a conversation with someone who had made that point, and I honestly didn't know whether they were trying to say that it was a trifling amount or that it was far too much. You know, the tone of it really made it sound like they were saying, that's nothing, because previously they'd been talking about the money Anish Sarkeesian had raised, and yeah, you're asking for a lot less than she did, she achieved. So I really couldn't tell what position they were taking on that issue. You know, I had to ask them. They didn't reply, obviously, because why would they? It might have made them look stupid. But yeah.
We just spit on virtue in this civilization, and I think this is an example of it, because it was Plato that argued that like all virtue is between two extremes. All right, perfect example is the church chastity promise ring dancing with daddy creepy garbage. The opposite of slutty the chastity is not the opposite of slutty. Okay, being a frigid is the opposite of slutty. Yeah. Chastity is having sex when it's the right time to have sex with the right person. It's not giving it away to everybody, and it's not humming the national anthem while your husband grunts away.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
It's enjoying filthy, disgusting sex with your husband. And so what we're kind of, like, the frustrating aspect is on the one side, you have the people that support Sarkeesian are the most gullible idiots you can imagine, but then we have the other extreme of extreme skepticism, and it's like I've had, because I'm trying to answer the critics of this, unlike Sarkeesian, I'm trying to answer people, but so many of them are these radical skeptics that can't be convinced by anything. You know, true skepticism, ask questions, but be open to changing your mind.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, because I do think that credulity is something that's severely lacking in a lot of spheres these days. And I think this isn't necessarily just Anita Sarkeesian related. In fact, I think it's the entire world. One thing that drives me crazy is when I'll be discussing politics with an American, and I hate to say this, but it is always an American that I have this conversation with. And I'll say something like, Russia today created fences to block off ISIS militants, so I don't think they're going to flip to ISIS. And they'll say, yeah, but that's Russia today. You know, on the Young Turks or CNN or Fox or wherever, they say this. And I'm like, yeah, but that's Fox, CNN, and whatever. Do you understand? They're both the same. You know, I treat them with exactly the same amount of credulity. I assume they're telling me half the story, but I assume that some of what they're telling me is true.
And, you know, there's also another example of this. The people that completely blindly follow their government, which is who you were just talking about, completely believe, and then you've got the people that are just completely cynical about nationalism entirely. Yeah. You know, if you want heroes, you have to believe in the nobility of the human spirit. You know, you can't be trying to drag everybody, like, you can't be cynical about everything.
You need to be skeptical. I agree.
Yeah, skepticism's in the middle.
I really do completely agree with this, and it's one thing that I really find is lacking from any kind of public discourse, is actually just believing what the other side tells you. You know, because a lot could get solved if you actually assume that they're not liars, because they, you know, you want them to assume that you're not a liar, and, you know, I don't even know how else to say it. It's just like, you know, if we all start believing each other, then we can actually come to some solutions, and that's the problem with the world at large these days, I think. And I know that's painting an extremely broad brush, but if you just listen to any kind of conversations on TV, you know?
Yeah, actually, And this goes exactly back to the social justice warrior playbook. And again, these are the freaking notes I was writing.
No, absolutely. It's fine. It's good that you've got them. It helps.
You know what? He said this, and we got to unpack this a little bit. But absolutely. He said, he was talking about, like, whatever. He said, I am not learned in being a woman. Learned in being a woman. experience is anecdote.
Yeah.
Not learned means that you have studied the experiences, the writings, the records of hundreds of human beings. I'm not learned about the military because I served in it. I am learned about the military because I have studied the history of military, of training, of how brotherhoods and gangs work.
Yeah. That's conversely, you're experienced in the military, you know? That's the difference. You're experienced in it. So you can give an accurate account of an individual's expected, you know, what they should be able to expect from joining the military, but that doesn't give you any greater insight into the history beyond anything that would be common knowledge.
Now, here's where it gets really toxic. By defining learned as having an experience, what you're saying is the only way to know somebody else is to be that person, that truly knowing them is impossible. And I'm not going to find the note, but basically his attitude towards women, if you cannot understand women by listening to them, by reading their stories, by looking at history, if you cannot understand women, then you can only have one of two attitudes towards them. You can worship them as this unknowable goddess, or you can treat them like a slave, an unknowable other. Like a dog, for instance. We know that dogs will eat to the point that they're sick if we let them, but we don't know why they do that. We don't really understand the dog. We command the dog. So either you obey them or command them. You cannot communicate as equals. Conversation is impossible. Knowledge is impossible. It's just barking, violence. Like, this is the end state of the social justice belief system.
I actually think it's maybe like the other way. Instead of looking at them as dogs, I think they look at them as gods. You know, it seems very much sort of, you know, God moves in mysterious ways. Women move in mysterious ways. Don't question it. Just accept it. And it's just like, no. And with Anita Sarkeesian's listen and believe. Are you shitting me, Anita? I don't do that for anyone, let alone you. You know?
But that's that. They completely dismiss the whole concept of knowledge, of understanding, of thought, of conversation. But what you're like, this is the same thing. This kind of relates to what you're saying about the political discourse, where we need to try and communicate with one another. It's the social justice, it's the Marxists, it's the progressives who say that communication is impossible. Everything is force.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true, and it's one of the things that it really gets my goat when they presume to speak for what you are thinking, and you tell them directly what you're thinking, and they say, well, you're saying that because you hate women, and it's like, you can't know that, you know? And I'm not saying
I
hate
women. You're the dog. The dog gets told, no, you're not eating because you'll get fat. You are object. I don't exchange information with you to understand you. I dictate to you, and you worship me as the ineffable unknowable.
Exactly. You accept violent, you can never understand.
It's a violent relationship rather than an equitable, communicatory, human relationship.
Absolutely. It's totally unequal. Totally unequal. And they almost seem to understand that it's unequal. And it's just like, then you're not fighting for equality, are you? And I just can't understand this kind of servile nature towards women. I like women just fine, but I'm not going to serve them. And have you seen like an article that Leigh Alexander put out where she's basically, it sounds like she's making a list of demands to her boyfriend, but what she's actually asking is that all men treat all women this way. And it's just like, yeah, but that's because you don't have a boyfriend to treat you this way. You know, this is something you would normally like ask your husband for or something like. You just don't have that, and yet you still have the same emotional needs, and they're not being met. And so now you're putting out articles saying, oh, all men should do X, Y, Z for all women because all women would like that. And it's just like, you can't seriously think that we think you know what all women want, because all women don't know what they fucking want. You know, it's been the eternal question since the dawn of time. You know, so it's just like,
woman is not an edifice. It's not a single thing.
Exactly.
Women are freaking human beings and peoples.
Exactly.
And you know what? Not every woman deserves to be treated like a lady. I treat people on an individual basis how they deserve to be treated.
I have also heard feminists say you don't get to deserve which women are deserving of your respect. And I can't believe that. What am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to do with that other than just mock them relentlessly? It's on my top 10 list of stupidest things I've ever heard a feminist say.
Projection. Everything that these people say about their opponents is projection about themselves.
Absolutely. I really think it is.
I've got a wonderful document that I bookmarked about how France was dealing with domestic violence and cheating, infidelity. Like, it's a really interesting document about the policies and the approaches they were trying to deal with this back 200-300 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's very different from what we do nowadays, but it's not the abusive, patriarchal, women are property nonsense that we're taught. You know, like that feminist narrative is completely false. It's a complete load of crap.
It never happened, and I can prove that it never happened.
And yet, it's a projection because that's how they want to treat men.
Yeah, I completely agree. I really do. It is so demonstrably false that women were property all through history. It's in at least Anglosphere societies. You know, I mean, there are societies where women have been treated like property. But the problem with this is that it always comes from a place of the desire to protect women. You know, in a lot of cases, it's a bit cynical, and it's the desire to protect them from themselves. And obviously, that infantilizes them. That doesn't, you know, doesn't bring.
Well,
it doesn't.
I'm not saying help. Infantilize women, but what do we have nowadays? We've stopped trying to. We don't want to infantilize anybody, and so we leave them prey to the giant corporations that just want to sell them donuts. So now you have people. There's a fine line between infantilizing people and offering them healthy guidance, not forcing them, but giving them guidance as to what they should be doing with their lives. Because, you know, like if you're 18, you graduate high school, you trusted your guidance counselor when they sent you to university.
Yeah, I mean, I think what would be more useful first is just information. I think one of the main problems that people have these days is a complete lack of information. And I find this all the time when I talk about politics, because nobody ever listens to the other side's opinion of what's going on and forms a balanced view based on, you know, the two opposing narratives that are being presented and finding what is probably common between the two, and that kind of bounces from left to right, you know, on point to point, and that is probably the correct narrative, you know? By just going by the facts of what the facts are that each one is reporting, you know, creates a more realistic narrative than just one alone. And I really think that that's the problem we have these days. There are just no mainstream media outlets doing that. And people aren't aware of what they're not being told. So they think they're being told the truth. So they think they are informed, which is way more dangerous than people who know they're not being informed. You know?
Yeah, a lot of this...
Sorry to interrupt. Do you mind if I just grab my cup of tea at the moment? Because my mouth's a bit parched. Do you want to take some questions or something for 2 minutes? Sorry about this.
Oh, yeah, go right ahead. Let's see if anyone has any good questions.
Get asking, guys.
Let's see, let me catch up here. When someone is blatantly, this is from Pilly, when someone is blatantly doing something dishonest and people know they're being dishonest, why do they carry on trying to be dishonest? And I'm going to assume that you're talking about the kind of the social justice warriors, like Anita is clearly a fraud. Again, in that video with Jordan Owen, I think Jordan should have been meaner. But the guy asked, when has Anita ever lied? Well, on her first video where she said she loved gaming. I think it's I strongly argue these people do not believe that honesty is even possible. They don't believe that communication between two people is possible. They believe that that everything, it's just personal opinion. Like, I've heard these people argue, like this girl I knew back in university, she was doing a communications degree, same as Anita Sarkeesian, strangely, argued that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is a cultural perspective, and we're being hegemons forcing that upon the innocent tribes of Papua New Guinea. So it's, they don't believe honesty exists, it's just a front you put up, it's a persona. You know, you call somebody a hypocrite not because they're a hypocrite, but just to discredit them. And yes, I own a fedora. I was wearing one in Less Than the Time of Heartache. Which I think is probably too wordy of a title, but it's stuck. Alright, from Lisker, question. Anita and her threats. She was threatened within 24 hours she was back to beg for donations. Well, see, that's the really suspicious thing, isn't it? It's, was this merely cynical manipulation, or, like we talked earlier in the podcast, that it is very suspicious that she got a screen tweet 13 seconds after they were sent to her, when she wasn't logged in at the time. And, you know, I've been exchanging emails with Officer Esparza, if I remember his name correctly. And quite frankly, he's getting a lot of people making these requests, and he's not really forthcoming on all of it. I've decided to not pursue that line of investigation. Don't think I'm going to get any straight answers out of him, and he's just going to get more annoyed with the whole thing. Now there is, let me get the guy's name right, goes by Nero on the Twitter. Writes for Breitbart.
Milo.
Yeah, Milo.
Yiannopoulos or something.
Yeah. Yiannopoulos. Sorry, I cannot do Greek names.
He probably gets all the time.
He's probably used to it, I hope. Mm. Or maybe I'm the first guy that screwed up his name and he hates me. now, he's doing a FOIA, a Freedom of Information request with... about what's going on with the FBI. I don't see there being much purpose in me pursuing this further with Officer Esparza. As I said, like, I tried to get some straight information out of the SFPD. Why the heck, if Anita was reporting these threats, why was there no police report? Like, wouldn't they still file a report even if they forwarded to the FBI? Wouldn't officers in her neighborhood need to know that there were violent threats made of the person at this address? This is all very strange. Why was I, not just me, but there are a couple of other people, were we the first people to contact Esparza about Anita's claims of unprofessionalism? Did all of these mainstream outlets completely ignore this situation? Those are questions, and I sent him those questions, and he just replied with it's been forwarded to the FBI. So, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff about this.
Maybe it's because they need feminism, because the FBI doesn't care if a woman's being bomb-threatened.
I'm sure. last time an officer said something slightly off to a feminist, we had a worldwide slut walk. So, you know, we're not going to get these answers, not from the SFPD. I think, like, you know what? They're cops. Esparza has more important things to talk about. Yes, yeah. He has car thefts. He has murders. And this is just some, you know, not like, hey, if they're death threats, they should be prosecuted. I'm not saying they shouldn't be. But at the same time, it's internet BS propaganda. I'm not going to bug them anymore. I want to know, but let's wait for the Freedom of Information request.
Yeah, I really think that's the best way, because that's the official source. So it's, you know, to criticize it will lead them down a rabbit hole if they were to challenge it themselves. And why would they? You know, they're normally in favor of the official source on their side. In fact, I had a discussion with Rami Ismail a while ago on Twitter about how it was when Gamergate first started. I can't remember exactly what it was about, but he basically ended it by saying, well, I don't know anything about it. Nobody said anything about it. And I was just like, everyone's saying things about it. What are you talking about? And then I realized that he meant no official publications had put an article out about it. And that was actually the first inkling I got that there was some kind of conspiring going on in the background. Because it's just like, you know, that it was such a strange response. He didn't have his own opinion because someone else hadn't told him what his opinion was going to be. You know?
Okay, there's a good question. Not a person says, what do we think of the escapist being DDoS?
Yeah, I wanted to address this. Do we know who did it?
This is the first I've heard of it, honestly. Like I said, I do not. There is so much going on. I don't know everything. I think the escapist's handling of Gamergate, I think it was very professional. Like, I don't expect them to get down on their knees and beg us all to love them. No, I don't. It's a social justice people demand BS apologies. They made a frank statement that was, listen, we could have handled it better, but we weren't complete dicks about it. And
they've got Bob Chipman on.
You know what?
So I can't believe that. You know?
Yeah, and he did get a little bit of spanking. Bob.
He's a dick. God, he's a dick.
He really is. But what they handled it well. So
they did.
As far as I'm concerned, Gabe is one of the good guys. I'm still watching Yahtzee's videos. I might even watch some of Bob's videos because I like his nerd stuff. But
yeah, I do. That's what pisses me off about Bob so much, right? It's because did you see his thing on Kevin Smith about how Kevin Smith was someone who really knew their shit and then kind of disappointed everyone? Honestly, Bob is not that far away from the same thing, you know?
He does not know anything about politics, and he refuses to learn anything.
I just wish he'd shut up about things that aren't video games.
If he were amenable to discourse, it wouldn't bother me. But he has he signed up for one belief system, refuses to change it, and he won't even, like, if you tried to explain to him that ultimately this thing's going to eat you alive,
he's like, there's a lot of me to eat. Sorry, I'm being a dick.
You want to talk about this DDoS thing? Because, again, I don't...
Yeah,
first
time. Does anyone know who did it? Because, I think that I would be inclined to think it was a social justice problem. Because it was, you know, they're the source in some way. Because, I mean, frankly, who in Gamergate would be interested in going after the escapist after the way they've responded? You know, so if anyone's got any information about that, I would really, really like to hear it. But I realize it's literally just happened, and, you know, there might not be any information to be had. So while I've got you guys on my own for a minute, I just want to talk to the trolls in the chat room. Guys, can you not see what's going on? You know, no one is trying to stop you from being dicks. It's just that no one agrees with you. That's the problem, you know? And that's the difference. You would stop people if we were going into your chat room and just saying these sort of things to you. You would stop it because you would find that unacceptable. And we don't. That's the point. It's fine to say what you want, but don't expect in the open marketplace of ideas that your ideas actually have any merit. If they don't, if they're so obviously disprovable, don't expect people to follow you. And don't get all pissy about it when people are like, no, that's stupid. You're an idiot. Because you are stupid, and that is stupid, and you are an idiot. You know, seriously, and you could stop being an idiot any time. You could sit there and you could look at the actual statistics of the things you're talking about, and be honest about them, and say, you know what, maybe we're pushing this too far. Maybe we're going too far. Maybe it's not exactly as we're misrepresenting it. You know, maybe, but you don't. You're fucking ideologues, and you're never going to change, and that's why you're going to lose this thing. That's why Gamergate has run so far out of the control of your side, and you have absolutely no idea what you're fucking doing. That's the problem. You have no idea. You are just such idiots. You have no idea what you're doing. And I'm not angry at you. Go ahead. You say what you like. You know, I don't even have to be responding to this, but I want to just to explain to you people, because look, everyone else in the comments is like, look, you're talking shit, Lazy. You know what I mean? And I don't have to say anything because everyone can see it. They're intelligent thinking people and they can see what you are saying is nonsense. But sorry, I just wanted to say that because it doesn't piss me off that you say shit like this. It pisses me off that you can't see how you can't give anyone else's opinion any kind of credulity. You just can't.
I love the homophobia from these people as well. Semi-related story because it's funny. So I was at the bar with a coworker. We had a long day. We were working, just sitting down. It was a classy restaurant, not super expensive, but you know, a sort of place that you have linen, not you know. And this giggle of girls comes in with some stupid charity that, like, they don't even know what the charity is. It's just an excuse to wear bright day cool colors. And the one girl she's wearing jeans with the crotch cut out of her jeans. Yeah. Just, like, that's hey, look at, give me attention. And it's, you know, it's like I'm not in some dive bar right now. You know, if you walk into a dive bar like that, I wouldn't care. But it's like you're invading this place and you're doing this narcissistic charity garbage. And then she sees a look of disgust on my face, so she comes over and does this bum wiggle in front of my table. And I say to her, babe, your HPV is showing. And, the human papillomavirus?
I'm not aware of what that is.
Okay, it's an STD. So.
Oh, right, okay. Sorry, this is all terminology I'm not familiar with.
And so she flips out and starts calling my coworker and I gay and calling us poo stab.
There's nothing a woman hates more than rejection. It's and you've got all the power and you can't use it.
Well, so I follow up with, honey, you look like you'd be terrible in bed. Because that's clearly the only asset she has. She doesn't have a personality. She just has two holes down there that you can use. It's like these supposed social justice warriors, their first thing is to call you gay. What the hell is wrong with these people?
I don't know. And the Gamergate thing, the thing that... Hey, you're right. They often do. But this Gamergate thing, the first thing they started calling people is nerds, and it's just like, are you guys fucking stupid? Yes, they're all nerds. Everyone knows they're nerds. That's why we're doing this, you know.
That thing, yes, that's 556 or 223 in American. It was M16 AR-15 variant.
Looks like a bit of a left drift on.
Oh god, my breathing was totally off for that. I was rusty as all hell. It had been a few years since I last fired, and it was a rental that was not zeroed for me. So I'm actually a marksman. I have a 6-inch grouping at 300 yards when I'm in shape and when it's my rifle, not a cheesy rental with a laser sight that's dying. But that's my 30th birthday, so since I'm too old to get a tattoo, I went to shoot some Gats.
Hey, that's a perfectly good thing to do. People keep asking me if I support UKIP. I don't know. Do they have politicians? Because if they do, the answer is probably no.
You know what? Not British, barely follow it, but the UKIP seems to be the only people speaking sense.
That's true, though. That is actually true. Well, the... I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, I was going to say, there's a brilliant article by... I don't want to be a jerk, but the fat atheist who died fairly recently. Hitchens.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing wordsmith, even though I think his atheism is a little bit philosophically simplistic. But his brother wrote a great article about... and Sargon's temporarily offline. He'll be back in a minute. His brother wrote a great article about how they were pushing for all this social change and whatnot back in the 60s, and how he realized that it's the upper-class people pushing for this, and the upper-class people who can all move to gated communities or to neighborhoods too expensive for most people. And what's happening is, like, they're getting a huge influx of immigrants that... You know, we're not talking about immigrants that want to become British people, but immigrants that have no interest in learning the language, immigrants that are fleeing war in their own country, and they move into the working class neighborhoods. And so you get these older retired folk that were honest, hardworking, patriotic groups their whole life are now suddenly living in Mogadishu. And UKIP is the only one saying their voice, because the stupid, dumb blue collars, their lack of fashion, and their hamburgers, nobody cares what they think. But the blue collar is the lifeblood of a country, not the intelligentsia, not the nobility. It's the blue collar workers that make up your country. And if you're screwing those people over, you're screwing yourself out of a country.
Yep, I only caught the end of that because my connection dropped. But that I do agree with.
So I don't know about UKIP as a party overall, but they're the only one addressing this issue, as far as I'm.
There's a unique problem in British politics, which is anyone who advocates for Britain is a racist. By default, if you think that you should do the best for Britain, then you are probably a racist in the eyes of the mainstream media. And you've got to work very, very hard for people not to call you racist. And it's not even just the media, though. It's more about what the public think. You know, that it's so weird that all you'll see on Facebook being shared by dozens of your friends are these, you know, anti-UKIP memes. And, you know, I'm not saying they're not funny, because a lot of them are quite funny. But it's just like, there's this automatic assumption that you can never get past, that you must be a racist if you're against unlimited EU immigration and stuff like that. And it's just like, no, we're talking about numbers here, people. You know, we're talking about infrastructure that was built in the 70s, and we've seen, you know, something like 20-30% population increase. You know, it's not been upgraded properly. It's not been, you know, London's sewer system was blocked by tampons the other day. A year ago or something, and it was disgusting, you know, like sanitary pads and stuff. And it's just like, it's because it just wasn't designed to deal with the number of people that it's dealing with. And so, you know, unlimited immigration, it's got real world tangible effects on the country. It's a problem. And, you know, the UKIP want to deal with that. You know, no one's suggesting deportations or anything. They're just suggesting no more immigration. And I think that's a really reasonable thing to say, given the current state that we're in. So, to characterize them instantly as racist when a perfectly good... I mean, like, again, it's don't attribute to malice what could be easily attributed to either a good reason or stupidity. And in this case, I think it's a good reason. You know, I don't see the need for it. And I know I'm going on, but there are quite a few things I want to say about you, Kim, just to make sure that everyone understands how I feel about it.
I'm going to make some coffee. Microphone.
Absolutely, no problem. One of the things, yeah, London sewer systems are sexist. Yeah, exactly. You know, reality has got an anti-woman bias, or an anti-feminist bias, should I say, be more accurate. But yeah, one of the things is like, I can't remember my point now, god damn it. And now I'm on my own and no one can remind me of my point. Shit, where was I going with this? UKIP. Oh, yeah. The people that Britain sends to the EU are the funniest people around. Not because of anything that they are, in particular, but more what they do, I find. Because all of the continental countries send really positive, Euro-friendly politicians. And all Britain does is vote for the people who hate Europe the most and then send them over to Europe to tell the Europeans just how much they dislike being in Europe. And yet we never get to have a vote to leave. And I find that hilarious and the most typically British thing ever. And so when you've got Nigel Farage or Daniel Hannan, who I have to say, Daniel Hannan is someone I respect immensely. He's an incredibly intelligent man.
You mean Patriot Hannan?
Yes, absolutely. He's an English patriot through and through, and there is no way to paint him as a racist. You know, he is such an intelligent man, and he's got such great oratory skills. I love him. I absolutely love him.
This is another example of these two extremes that are both idiotic. If race doesn't actually exist, like if there is no biological difference between white and black people, for instance, then I can't actually be racist since they don't exist. They're just people.
Yeah,
it's a snake eating its own tail. But then you get to the other extreme, which is produced by the first, like, racism is 100%. You get the other extreme of race is a monolith. And I'll tell you, like, one of the... I'm playing Assassin's Creed, and what really strikes me about that is that every era has had its racial tensions. You know, like, Europe had racial tensions between the different groups in Europe. Like, Germany is a new idea. It was a bunch of different tribes up until 200 years ago.
I think the best way to describe it is more ethnic tensions. Because you might have several ethnicities in a race. You know, you've got the sort of Germanic, and then you've got the sort of Mediterranean ethnicities, and they're both considered white, aren't they? You know, and yeah, it's more like ethnicity. So it wasn't, the race was far less important, really, than the kind of race that they were.
You know, like, they're, it's not a monolith. There are so many edge cases, you know, that you can't... Like, the whole idea of, for instance, being a British racial purist, well, what's a racially pure Brit? You know,
well, there's no such thing.
It bleeds, the races bleed into one another. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that there's no such thing as a difference. You know, and... A country does need to preserve its culture, its heritage, values. It needs to be a nation, not just a bureaucracy full of corporate human resources.
Well, this is actually something I find quite interesting, because I do find generally that using race is actually quite unhelpful. I would think it would fly in the face of evolution if groups of humans that were separated for thousands of years didn't have some kind of evolutionary difference, no matter how small, you know, it literally just, you know, it could be a tiny, tiny difference. But I would find it strange if there wasn't. You know, if people living in Ethiopia had the same sort of genetic result through the evolutionary process as people living in Alaska, the native Alaskans, I would find that very odd. So to say that there's no difference in the races, I think, would be weird. But I think that the difference in races is probably primarily physiological, and I do realize that the brain's part of the human body. But I don't necessarily think there's any. I think that what goes on in the brain is often very much shaped by cultural factors. In fact, I think almost all of it. I mean, there's obviously a starting point. I remember reading that Einstein's brain was kept in a jar for 50 years under some guy's bed, and then they took it out and actually analyzed it, and it had twice as many, it was twice as dense with, some kind of nodes. I'm not a scientist. Whatever nodes that people have in their brain that connect and send electrical signals, it was twice as dense as the average person. So it's a good chance that I think that, you know, Einstein started from a good position because he was naturally gifted in this area. You know, and it's just biology that's done this. But I also think that anyone can be taught to think, and teaching people how to think, that, you know, that literally just the steps of rational inquiry allow almost like anyone to reach a much higher level of understanding of almost everything. You know,
I would agree that, like, not everybody's going to be able to read deep philosophical works or quantum mechanics, but everybody can be taught to think. You know, yeah, you don't have to be a genius computer programmer to understand basic 1+1=2 logic trains. And yeah. I think you'll love this. This was posted by Slate Star Codex, and it's, let's flip this on its head. Like, kind of our understanding right now of human nature. And it doesn't matter if you're on the left or the right, that biology is fixed, but that sociology can change people.
Absolutely. And improve them. That's the thing.
Well, the right says that biology is fixed, we can't help people. And the left says we can reprogram everybody to be whatever we want. What if it's the exact opposite, he said? Because if you change a person's environment, if you give them a better diet, then they will have larger brains. They will be healthier, happier people that are less prone to violence. And in fact, if we fed prisoners better food, there would be less violence in prison. Like that's been a demonstrated fact. Where area?
I just want to interject there, right? Just to give an extra thing. I need to look this up. I really can't remember who said it, but there was an ancient Greek philosopher, I think he was a philosopher, who said, look, right, if you've got a young man who is suffering from, you know, just, he, you know, he's angry and violent all the time, bring him to me and I will change his diet. And this guy, his career was literally as a dietitian for young angry men and to make them more passive. You know, I'm not surprised there are studies that back that up, you know. I'm absolutely not surprised because it was, you know, demonstrable from the results that he had, clearly, you know.
What it boils down to is from an ego-psych perspective, if you're starving, you're going to die anyway, so you might as well try and kill that guy and steal his food. Mm. Whereas if you're fat and healthy and, like, why would you go fight somebody else when you've got everything already?
Yeah, yeah. No, what's in it for you?
Sociologically... What if there is a particular model of the healthy human mind and relationships, like having loving parents and, you know, like overcoming challenges but not being beaten, etc.,
yeah,
that you can get wrong? You can gaslight somebody and make them go crazy and damaged, but you can't change them for the better. Like, there's a best way of the... So sociology is the rock that we can't change, but if we start working on biology... And, like, biology would be getting people better diets. It would be supporting, like, in the black ghetto, it would be supporting the family unit as opposed to creating economic policies that encourage single motherhood. What if those biological things are the way we change the world? Because it sounds brilliant to me.
I mean, I definitely think there's a lot to be said for a lot of the points you're making here. I've said it before, and I will say it again, that the most emotionally balanced and healthy people I know come from two-parent households where the parents just, you know, they're good, they're a good match for each other. And so it's really one of those things that it really annoys me when people say that fathers are unnecessary and things like that, because I've seen from personal experience people who have grown up without fathers, strong father figures, who take care of their masculine needs, as it were, as kids, and they've turned into right hellions, and they've been awful. Whereas, you know, I've seen the reverse, and they've been consistently great people, really caring, empathetic, responsible people who go on to join the system and operate happily within the system because they are healthy, responsible people. And so I really think there is something to be said for the what has been the standard for thousands of years of humanity as... Maybe it was that way because it was useful, and not just because it was a social construct. You know.
You know what? And think about the past, like the past few thousand years of history. How much, like sociologically, not that much has changed. You know, like obviously there's different cultures, different empires. You know,
they've worked in practically the same way, though. Yeah.
Whereas the big difference between 1800 and 800 BC, the biggest difference is that we managed to tame the wild, like, natural world to create more abundance, more food, more luxury for everybody.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing at the moment is absolutely indicative of whenever these set of circumstances come together. I think that if the Romans hadn't had slaves and had developed steam power when Hiero of Alexandria invented it, then we would have had the Industrial Revolution probably around 10 AD. 10 AD. No. The year 1000, sorry. It's late. Mm. We would probably have had it about around then, if not earlier. And then, you know, the people 800 years ago would be in the position that we're in right now. And it would probably be largely the same. I mean, it would be different ethnic groups, probably, but it would be a very similar sort of, you know, world that we would live in. I really do think so. I think that everything that's really happened is just a natural consequence of human nature under certain conditions. And the thing is, one of the things that I've always found through reading history is that human nature is just always the same. The motivation people have for taking certain actions is always the same. It's just a human constant. People, or certain kinds of people, act in certain kinds of way in certain kinds of situations. And there are lots of different people, there are lots of different situations, there are lots of ways to act. But a lot of them are very common, and a lot of them are very easy to predict. You know, and this is why I'm turning to a bit of a doom monger on my channel. It's just like, look, guys, I can really see some bad stuff ahead, because if you look at this, this, and this, it looks like it's the same thing.
You know, I think we were talking about this before the show, that revolutions aren't nice. You know, like I was on a different podcast. I was like that's another thing. There's some people that are just hankering for a race war. You know, like the people are so angry at blacks all the time. It's like, dude, race wars aren't nice. They're bloody terrible. It's women getting their babies cut out of their uteruses with machetes.
Yeah.
You know,
any kind of conflict like that is any kind of civil war, any kind of internal faction fighting, it is to the death. That's the thing. It's to the absolute destruction of one faction or another.
Yes, it's. And, it, like, yeah, if you're talking about the Tea Party or Occupy Wall Street, a big revolution, getting rid of the evil bankers, that it's not going to be pleasant. You know, we're all, like, it might be in 100 years that we're all better off for it, but for our lifetimes, if there's a revolution in our lifetime, you know, get used to eating ramen noodle for the rest of your life, because that's what's going to happen to you if you're alive.
Yeah, and even if you know you're not part of the group that's going to be the victim of the revolution,
everybody's the victim of the revolution.
Yeah, the things you'll see, the things that will happen, they will stay with you. These revolutions are just so awful. They are so much more awful than like normal conventional wars, because in most conventional wars, yeah, there are atrocities committed, but they stop eventually. You know, they eventually stop, and people say, okay, you know, enough killing, a lot of people have died, you surrender, Germany, don't you? And Germany says, oh God, yes, I surrender. And then everyone continues. You know, in a revolution, if the First World War, Second World War had been revolutions, there would be no more Germans. You know, that's what it would be like. And there wouldn't be a German revolution.
The killing went on for 40 years.
Yeah. Thousands and thousands of aristocrats were executed.
And not just aristocrats, okay? Because, like, the
people connected to them. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, this is your thing. Even there,
in the provisional government, the first government that took over, and it's been a while since I read it, you know, but
absolutely.
The first government that took over after they killed the king, those guys got killed.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a time of absolute, and it's always absolute paranoia as well. You know, it's like, you know, like communists hiding behind every bush. I read somewhere that at the height of the Cold War, the Americans thought that there were more communists in America than there were in the Soviet Union, you know? And it's just like they had accounted for something like 1,300 communists for every citizen in the United States, and there were only 1,700, one every 1,700 in the Soviet Union. And it's just like, you guys are crazy. That is like insane levels of paranoia. You know, and the CIA, before the Soviet Union collapsed, the CIA was pumping out all this stuff about how, you know, the Soviets are doing so well and all this sort of stuff. And then they collapsed and everyone's like, oh, or they were dying. We weren't sure, you know. And it's those sort of levels of paranoia that are bred. And then it just spills out into open violence. And because it all comes from a place of fear and frustration, it's just the worst thing ever. I can't stress how much that reform is needed before it comes to blood. Because when it comes to blood, it's really going to come. I mean, imagine, how long is it until one of the cops at an event like Ferguson, one of these fucking arrogant, macho, dickhead cops, shoots a protester in the face? How long is it going to be? You know? And then what happens? Honestly, I really think people need to start thinking about, like, the way that things are being done. Because it's on the cards. I mean, I'm thinking, I'm doing a video on this, and I'll have the research done for the video. But I can't remember what the name of the massacre was, but it was in an Irish town where the British cavalry basically massacred an entire, like an entire mob that was protesting, probably for legitimate reasons. And you know, this was one of the defining things on the way to the Free State of Ireland in 1922. It was things like this that was causing such internal dissent. And honestly, how long before these cops go massacre people? How long?
You know, there's one horror story I read called The Day the EBT Cards Stop. Because, like, this whole social welfare system has created this giant dependence community. And, like, largely in the black ghettos. And it's going to start off with all the blacks that are relying upon this government money, they go and raid the local grocery store. And then they stop supplying food to the grocery stores. And so then they start going further afield. Eventually there's a riot, a bunch of people are driving to the office and in traffic, and there's a riot, spills over to the highway, they're going to be pulling people out of their cars and killing them. The cops will not have a sufficient response time to do anything about this. Like the blacks are not stupid people. They are outsmarting the cops with the Twitter nonsense that goes on anytime there's polar bear hunting, at which point vigilantism is going to start in the white neighborhoods. And the cops, who can't do anything about the black criminals, will start going after the white vigilantes, at which point the white vigilantes turn on the cops. And, you know, you write the ending to that story, and you tell me there's a happy ending. Maybe we should be seeking a solution. Like, this is my big problem with so many white nationalists just love hating black people. And it's like, your hatred of black people is going to wind up with a bloody war zone, kids dying in the street, mass starvation, and, you know, maybe we should be finding a bloody solution about this instead of just screaming racist all the time. Still there, Sargon? Alright, Sargon appears off air right now. And I guess, are you back?
I am back. Sorry about that. It's my bloody internet connection. Could you, you said social welfare and then mine cut out.
Oh, sorry, it's like the story of the EBT cards. Basically, my rant, it really pisses me off when people call me racist, because if I talk about race, it's to try and stop a race war. It's trying to smack some common sense into people that it's not okay to hate blacks, but it's also not okay to pretend that blacks are saints and there's no problems in the ghetto, because we are headed towards a very bad place with all of this, and we need to start finding some solutions rather than just political grandstanding.
I think it's also important to remember that I think that in America, and I'm not trying to generalize, I don't know, but it seems that black is an identity as well. You know, it's not just a race. You know, that's why you've got white guys who are pretending to, like, joining gang culture and that sort of thing. And again, I'm no expert on any of this, but it just seems like it's an identity as well as a race, you know? And
it's a very toxic one. Like, T.J. Sotomayor, he struggles against this all the time, where he's trying to create a positive black community, not a dependent one. And I don't agree with the guy on everything. But, like, he gets called a coon and an Uncle Tom all the time for doing this.
For trying to create a respectable black culture, effectively.
Exactly. For trying to find a positive solution. And it's the social justice warriors all over again, where it's dividing everything into camps, and this manipulation, the simplistic thinking, the lies, the profiteering that is headed towards a nasty climax eventually.
Yeah, I think that fundamentally, you know, even if everyone can't agree on what the causes of this is, but we're on a trajectory that is heading to a bad place, and it's probably a lot of things that are causing it. You know, it's probably not just one thing. I mean, I can't imagine it just be one thing. It's probably literally the cumulative effect of all of these things being true to a measure, you know, being true to a certain degree. You know, there probably is truth in each statement that everyone is making. So rather than declaring that everyone has the absolute truth, why can we not just look at it and go, okay, all of these things probably are contributing to this awful trajectory that we're on. And it's crazy because we shouldn't be on this kind of trajectory. You know, the Pope the other day was like, oh, well, we're in the beginning of World War III. And it's like, oh, that's fucking brilliant, isn't it? You know, that's just amazing. We live in a time of such We know, we absolutely are. I agree. But when it's coming from the Pope, you know.
I can't believe the Pope said that. I really like that guy.
Oh, yeah, no, he's great. Don't get me started.
Don't get me started on the Republicans that keep saying he's a socialist because he says that their economic system is screwed up.
It's obviously screwed.
We're a bunch of psychopaths that screw one another over. Like, you know, all right, black kids in the ghetto murder each other for sneakers. We rat each other out and manipulate and destroy the environment so that we can get a new SUV, you know? It's like, I'm a capitalist, all right? I am so right-wing that everything I say is hate speech. But this corporate world is messed up. It's sick. It's perverse.
I think that's actually why I actually despise the social justice warriors so much, because I really, really do try to remain as centrist as possible. But I am pretty liberal in a lot of regards. You know, I think that gays should marry and, you know, do whatever. Just do whatever you want as long as you leave other people alone, you know? And so I can be surprisingly liberal in a lot of regards. I think that people are very much surprised when I am. And yet I'm finding myself agreeing with Fox News a lot these days, because all Fox News seems to be asking for is the right to just be left alone and to not be slandered as the world's worst people. And I'm sure they're not the world's worst people. You know, I'm really sure they're not. I'm sure they're just, you know, I'm sure they think of themselves as, you know, just right-wing, conservative, rugged individuals who, you know, through hard work and moxie got to where they are, and they want everyone to have that opportunity. You know, and the thing is, and there are plenty of people on the right who are saying, look, the economic system isn't working. You know, not everyone is having that opportunity. I think that's the fundamental difference. You know, the left saying the economic system is evil because people don't have opportunities, and the other are saying the economic system is broken because it doesn't have opportunities, and yet they can't come together just on the lack of opportunities point. You know, honestly, that drives me crazy.
And you know what? And I really, really hope that this, again, this has been happening everywhere. But the people, like the progressive stack, the social justice is just the latest form of it.
Absolutely. PC is just the worst.
I wouldn't call them smart, but they're cunning. And they have not had such a big chink in their armor before. And I just hope to God we can come together over this and start. One of the things I'm loving about this, Sargon, is that I'm talking to people that I never would have talked to before. You know, there's people with different politics from mine who realizing, oh, Davis isn't a bunch of hate speech. That I'm realizing, you know what? They're not a bunch of bleeding heart liberal idiots. And we're, like you said, everybody has a little piece of the puzzle. I don't claim to have the perfect solution. These people aren't claiming to either. It's the manipulators, the social justice warriors. They claim to have the solution, and it's going to be the death of all of us.
I totally agree. I really disagree with the trajectory they try to put civilization on. I can't stand it. It's just the most anti-meritocratic thing I can imagine. And just no. As soon as you mention the word quotas to me, I'm done. No, we're not having quotas, because quotas are immediately not the best people for the job. You know, it by default, I can't assume that they're the best people. You know, whereas in any other system, you really can. You know, because the cream always rises to the top, unless it's specifically being prevented from rising.
You know what? This is another funny thing. It's because, like, back when I was in university, I used to, like, I was free market capitalist. I was, you know, libertarian-ish, socially progressive, whatever. But I thought social justice was a good thing, and it's because. Well, and partly it's the duty of the young is to rebel against all the stupid institutions of their parents and point out all the flaws, and then to try and build better institutions and then become the fuddy-duddies that their kids rebel against. And you know what? Institutional violence, which is kind of a BS term, but institutional violence, the idea that there's institutions in society that aren't perfect, that need to be reformed, this is true, that is, no institution is perfect. We have yet to build a utopia, and the things can always be better. But social justice, it's just funny how it sounds like such a nice thing.
It's co-opted the term. You know, it was always economic, wasn't it? I'm not actually an expert on the origins of social justice.
Oh, it's been poisoned from day one. It's about perceived harm rather than measurable harm. That, like, this, the first guy, John Rawls, did this whole philosophical work on justice. He's an ethicist that works for a university, and you can guess how much you can trust him. It was, like, these are the people that start tossing in words like dignity as a human right, you know? The guy that Jordan was debating, what did he say? Emotional violence. You talk about those nasty tweets Anita was receiving and calling them emotionally violent.
Yeah, when he said that, I was quite outraged.
You can't measure that.
It's not violence. It might be something else that you might want to say is harassment or assault or something like that, but it's not violence.
You know? You can measure violence. Like, a bloody nose is a bloody nose. You know, like a punch to the face is a punch to the face. There, like, that is assault, black and white. If you're a histrionic baby that cries over everything, then you're going to, what you consider emotional violence is going to be different from what a sane and healthy human being considers emotional violence.
Exactly. It's entirely subjective. Entirely. You know, and it's totally unquantifiable, and you can't ever really prove it, and you can never disprove it. And so, you know, what are you going to do? You can't run a system like that. You cannot run a system like that.
Go to social justice on Wikipedia. One of the first names mentioned is John Rawls. Go look at his book on justice. And I'm not saying he doesn't, like, listen, these people always have a couple of good points.
Exactly. That's everyone does. Everyone always has some good points. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making any points at all, you know?
Well, and you can't have a pure lie. A lie always needs to contain truth. Like, their evil is not a thing in and of itself. It's a perversion of good. And, like, I've seen some of the most evil stuff I've seen was 99.9% some of the most brilliant, deepest wisdom I'd ever seen. With just, like, one little twisted bit that turns into complete poison that destroys lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's always the most dangerous form of ideology as well. It really is. And one thing that I've never believed that the ends justify the means. I've never have. Because, you know, if you have to kill, say, 1 million people to form a state, then what are the eyes of the people who form that state going to look like? You know, they're going to look sunken and hollowed out because they've seen 1 million people die at their own hands, you know. The ends don't justify the means. They don't create what you're trying to create, at least not for several generations afterwards. And even then, is it really, you know, the people at the time who are being, you know, eradicated, they're never going to be the ones who think this is okay. And, you know, it's just obviously wrong. You know, to take wrong action is to be in the wrong, and it is to be the sort of person who takes wrong action. So if the results are a positive thing, you've still been insanely selfish by taking several wrong actions to get to these results that are good for you and maybe other people, you know, but primarily you. And that's I can't abide by it. I really can't.
I completely agree. And that's the thing. We cannot stoop to their level fighting these people. This is another thing we were kind of tossing back and forth before the show. The Rules for Radicals by Alinsky. I'm planning to do a multi-video review of it, analyzing it, well, first pointing out how evil it is, but then analyzing it as, what if, rather than a manual for how to take over and destroy Western civilization, you look at it as, this is how politics works in a mass democracy, where every retard has the vote, and we've got mass communications like TV and radio.
Facebook has put me off democracy. I know what the idiots think. I don't approve.
Exactly. You know, like that, yeah, your Facebook feed, that's not even what the voters look like, because you have smarter friends than average. Like, all everybody listening, you guys have smarter friends than average.
And, yeah, and trust me, I go and chat with Swindon. But sorry,
the methodology of Alinsky is just so psychopathic and manipulative, and it ends justifying the means, and it ultimately just, it's a death spiral of destruction with no positivity coming out of it. Well, and the big problem with the right is that they've either they're complete idiots, or they embrace the same sort of nonsense, and so they become just as bad.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the right, you know, Bush with Iraq, you know, it seemed like a good idea, I assume, to them, and therefore they thought that, you know, well, at least it'll be, you know, the end that we're looking for. Well, I mean, it may well have just been self-motivated by profit for Halliburton, but, you know, it obviously doesn't justify itself because of the number of deaths. And the social justice warriors are exactly the same. They will say and do whatever they can to make social justice, you know, to put it in control, to give it, to subvert, to lie, to manipulate, to do, you know, to dox, to bully, to shout down, to insult. They will literally do everything they can to achieve their end. And I'm thinking, wow, that is so fucking immoral, because I wouldn't do 90% of the shit that they do to someone else so I could win in the end. I just wouldn't. That, honestly, I don't know, I'm sounding like some moralistic prick, but frankly, I am a moralistic prick. And I'm actually outraged, because these days it really pisses me off that they all claim that they've got these great high and mighty principles, but they don't act on them. They don't act in them. And if you don't act on your principles, if you don't stand for your principles, then you don't stand for anything. You know, and nobody stands for anything. The people in charge, the mainstream media, these social justice warriors, the people who are suddenly in control of everything, have got no goddamn principles. And that really bothers me.
This is the story that we want to tell with this documentary, is that these people are so vile. There is so much just evil, nasty stuff that they do. And we want to tell that story. We want to put this story where people can see this. You know, where to get people, don't be so gullible. These people are monsters. And like, this is not an exaggeration. It's documented fact, and we want to put this together into a story that most people can understand.
We shouldn't say monsters, because people will hear you say that and say, oh my god, right, that's a quote I'm taking out of context. Because, you know, I think that they won't understand that we're having a relaxed conversation, and, you know, it's more of a discussion of ideas and speculation and conjecture a lot of the time. You know, but it's informed. You know, it's informed conjecture. And
I'm long past worrying about that, because
I know, but I
watch videos and they can't understand complex ideas. Like, they can't understand sentence with a comma in it, and they watched a quote mine.
Yeah, that is true. But I just want to, like, on record that I've
getting people fired from their jobs. The guy that started Shield, he got fired. Or he's getting fired at the end of a week.
Why? Why? That is such a worthwhile thing to have done. Honestly, the Not Your Shield hashtag, it cemented Gamergate as being in the right. You know, the gamers themselves are saying, look, we're not racist. And to prove it, the people who weren't white men said, look, this is us speaking to you social justice warriors directly, you know. That, you know, you are in the wrong, they are in the right, and this is how the outside world can understand that, you know? And sorry, I didn't mean to go off on one, but...
You know, here's the insanity of it. If this guy had done... If he was, like, some scumbag that started accusing his boss of being racist, whatever, so he could get a promotion... Like, if he were that sort of scumbag, then he could get away with that. But saying that... Don't exploit my black identity gets him fired.
It's insane how the people who are outside of this can't just instantly identify them as being snakes. Because I think they are vipers. I think they absolutely are. They will take any action that profits themselves, no matter how harmful to the people, and just for dissent. Just for dissent.
Don't underestimate the mob mentality, Ink Penification says. Well, exactly. This is what we are trying to do. It's like, you know what, the mob is, they're dumb, but they're a particular kind of dumb. If you show them that, you know what, these people are getting people fired, these people are launching these unethical attacks on people, these people are engaged in nepotism, in collusion, and hypocrisy. If you show them this, we can get them up. That is why they are terrified of this documentary, because they are vipers, and it's not hard to show that.
I totally agree. And what I want everyone to really take away from this is that you guys are just two guys doing it, and that it might be helpful if people could help you just physically with research, with information, you know, leads, places to go, because I suspect that you guys would strongly welcome that, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. We've been getting amazing help thus far. They're like our supporters are absolutely awesome. And thank you to everybody that is supporting it, either financially or morally in spirit. It's been great. And you know what? Jordan and I are both in positions right now that, you know what? You can't attack me. What, you're going to call me a racist? I don't care. You know, I don't have a job.
Well, yeah, no, that is your job, isn't
right
it?
Now,
you know? So,
I do YouTube.
At the moment, you're a documentary maker filmed by public grassroots support. You know, that's what you are at the moment, you know? And that's anything they say against you can just be used against them because this is the kind of hate speech they'll use. And it is hate speech. Everything they say is hate speech.
It is straight out of high school, man.
Yeah, it's kiddie. You know, exactly, it's kiddie.
The bullies are making fun of... They're pushing around and bullying the nerd group, the video game developers, the video game industry. They're trying to push those people around. Mm. And even though I play video games, I'm not a game developer. I'm not part of that field. I'm kind of coming in from left field. And it's like, no, stop pushing these people around. You guys are bullies. Now they're attacking. Like, you know what? We can take it. We can be the voices that get our names smeared through the media. We can take it. Somebody needs to take it. And we can do this, and we can just send it right back at them.
Yeah, no, I agree that someone does. And I think that this is a project that's important. I think that, like you said, it is absolutely important to have something that isn't on YouTube that's out there that can be referenced because it will be in IMDb, so people will be able to link to it. It will exist, and the mere existence of it will create a hiccup in the narrative. You know, it will show that there was a dissenting opinion in the narrative. So did you catch any of that? Or were you grabbing?
Oh, yes, yes, I got all of it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I just, you know. That it exists is an important thing in itself.
Their narrative is extremely fragile as well. Like, their narrative, it requires that you ignore the evidence of your own lying eyes. You know, every day you see stuff that doesn't agree with social justice. And so, you know, you go back to your professor and say, well, what about this fact? And then they come with this elaborate, you know, they come up with a conspiracy theory explaining why the facts don't match the reality. And it's fragile. It's very fragile. And if you hit it in the right place, it shatters like glass.
I agree. And one of the things that I find is, yeah, it's you know, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? And I think that applies most... It's not even for the people who are learning social justice in universities. It's more for the general public, you know, just to say, look, listen to the way they talk to people. Is that civil? You know, would you accept that in civil discourse? Or would you assume that person has something to hide and an agenda under their sleeve? You know, these people, you don't treat people like this if you're not trying to hide something. You just don't do that. You know, it's insane. It's in no way any kind of civil discourse. And that in itself makes me suspicious of them from the outset. You know? What I wanted to say is, if I were to give advice to your project, because I'm in no way involved, just in case anyone was curious, this is the first time we've ever spoken, just apart from about a 10-minute quick, you know, introductory chat before we started the live stream, and I've never contributed any money to the project. Not that I wouldn't. It's just that I think in the wake of the Gamergate thing and their Patreon, I personally won't be funding any other content creators for anything. And two reasons. One, I'm a cheap bastard and I don't have very much money. But secondly, ethical issues. You know, I want to make a very clear statement that I am not like these people. I am not suddenly going to start giving money to people just as moral support, because there is no good comes from that. That would be direct financial interest that influence I would have over someone, and I don't want people thinking that I'm trying to get that. You know, I want this to be a war of ideas, and I want to fight it on my ideas alone, because I think they might have some merit.
I don't think anybody that's, and we should make sure of this, but I don't think anybody that's appearing in the documentary is supporting it financially, and they shouldn't be. That's exactly, that is an ethical violation. And if we are trying to be squeaky clean. I'm not saying we're perfect, okay? We're fallible human beings, but we are really trying to hold ourselves to a very high standard with all of this.
Yeah, that's actually the impression that I think everyone gets from this side of the argument, no matter who you are and where you come from. This has become, I really think it's become a point of principle. You know, these people will do what they want, and it's not right to just do what you want, because it often comes at the expense of others. Yeah, I agree. If someone involved in the documentary is, you know, who is going to benefit from the documentary is also putting money into the documentary, I mean, I'm not saying you necessarily have to stop doing that, but I really think that should be made very public. You know, definitely make a public statement so you can go on record by saying yes, you know, so people can know that you have a vested interest in the documentary. That doesn't automatically make what you're saying false or anything like that. It just means that people have to be aware of it. It's about transparency, you know. What I would recommend, what my advice as someone who is just a concerned citizen, would be, and I'm sure that this is all stuff that you already do, so please don't assume that I think that you're not doing any of these things. I just wanted, you know, just to add to the discussion, really. I'm sure you're going to be able to say, look, we do all that, obviously. But it's more for, you know, and if you do, that's great, because this is stuff that people can take away, I guess. I would recommend, the way I'd do it, I suppose, would be to maybe open up a forum somewhere or something like that and do it entirely publicly with your information. And I know that sounds risky, I know that sounds crazy, but all of the information I think you're going to use is already public knowledge for us, you know? I think our side is already well aware of all of this information, or at least most of it, you know, at least the beginning of the leads, you know, and you'll be, you know, revealing, filling out these, like, you know, filling below the surface, you know, and showing everyone where the roots go and what that, I imagine. And so I think keeping all of this as a matter of public record as you're doing it would be a useful thing, because then people can add or suggest things into the narrative that fit and that you may have missed or something like that, you know. And I'm not saying that you have to do this, but I think I think it would definitely help in general. You know, it would definitely be, it would allow people to know that you're going to do a good job, you know, because I think at the moment people think that you're untested. You know, they don't know anything you've done so far. And so, you know, I think that if you can be, the more transparent you can be and show you're doing a good job, because I think you probably are. I mean, so far tonight, I've enjoyed your lines of inquiry. They're the same lines of inquiry I would have made if I were doing it. And that reassures me. That makes me think, you know, okay, you know, that's great, because, I mean, and the thing is, you enjoy...
You still there? Oh, okay. I'll reply to a bit of that. That is something that we are going to get a forum going for all of the supporters, because we do want to hear the voices. One of the things we've kind of been big about is that when you're making a documentary, it can't be about you. I think that Jordan and I are going to be characters in the documentary. We're the, you know how, like, Star Wars has Luke Skywalker, who doesn't know anything, and they have to explain what the Empire is to him. Same thing. We're kind of the characters, the viewpoint of the documentary, but it can't be about us or our politics or or any of that. It needs to be about the people we're interviewing, about what's happened to them, what's happened to people in this community, and a fair representation of all of this. And so that certainly does involve getting people's voices. So we will be setting up a forum for that. Second of all, what we're doing, because we haven't hit our funding goal, but I really, like, it's hard to explain, but I'm convinced this is the right thing to do. I'm convinced that this is not, you know, chasing after waterfalls or whatever the song says. What we're hoping to do over the next month is go and get some of the preliminary material, some of the interviews that we're going to need for this documentary. They've agreed to be on the thing. We will be booking the flights on Monday, and it's very seat of the pants. Should be able to pay our rent, probably, but then we will actually have something we can go out and show to people, you know, because, like you said, Sargon, you're back now?
Yeah, I am back. Sorry, where did I get to in my long, rambling diatribe?
Talking about, like, having a forum, getting people involved, and yes, that is part of our plan, and we are, over the next month, we are going to be showing some of the videos that we've been filming with people.
Excellent.
To show you we are doing this, this is serious.
But that's actually a great idea, because then people can give you feedback on how the interviews went and what you could do better in future interviews. You know, just honest feedback, because, you know, I'm sure they want to have a voice in the production of it, because this is, I mean, you're being crowdfunded. This is a group, this is a, you know, a, literally a group sort of effort, but concerned citizens.
I was just saying while you were gone, it's like Jordan and I, maybe, like, we'll probably, haven't finalized how we're going to finish the thing, understand, but
of course,
probably we're going to be the viewpoint characters, but it's not about us. We're the Luke Skywalker that needs to have the Force explained to him.
Yeah, that's a perfectly valid
point. It's not about guys from the Manosphere, or guys that are from atheist cult, or from... I don't really think you guys are cult.
Maybe you should make a tactical maneuver and not host it yourselves. And I know that probably sounds quite strange, but seriously, you could get someone they couldn't attack hosting it, and just all they, you know, you guys write the script and stuff like that, and, you know, I'm sure you can do voiceovers and stuff like that for the information when you're detailing it and stuff, but have, like, the narrative that you're going to be constructing read out by, I mean, literally be as cynical about this as you want. Find someone, I mean, there are plenty of, the movement is very diverse, you know, Gamergate is insanely diverse. You could probably find a lesbian black teenage woman to do your reading for you in Gamergate.
Well,
you know, I've
we're
seen
be interviewing those people. Like,
yeah.
The guest list we have so far, list of interview, I don't know what to call it, it is, and I was actually saying, I was talking with Justine, who, like, her and I have exchanged tweets over the past year, a bit of a pre-existing online friendship. First time I've chatted with her, is I was saying, you know what, I really hate the fact that I'm using you as a token. Because I respect you as a person. I respect your accomplishments, your intelligence. I don't agree with everything you say, but you have a lot of guts saying it despite the fact that you're frequently attacked. That's really the reason that you're on here.
Yep.
But it's also because you're a token, and I hate that.
The thing is, I know that it's awful that you have to do that, and I'm not joking. It's necessary because they make it necessary.
And she said, you know what, turn it into a joke. Because it is a joke. It is ridiculous that there's tokenism. And make it funny. And that's, I think, the sanest attitude. So we want to get these people not as the viewpoint character, but as themselves, talking about their experiences. And a diverse set of people. Not one narrative, but showing that, like, the social justice warriors, they are against everybody. They are against everybody that is not themselves. And
exactly.
Plurality is a good thing. So, plurality of voices in this.
I tell you what, Ryan, I personally, I've got to stress this, that I know this. I don't want this to sound offensive in any way, but I really don't think you and Jordan can be the ones hosting it. I honestly think that there are better people to do that, and that's not to take anything away from you and Jordan. It's more about what you're doing and who you're targeting it at. If the social justice warriors are constantly harping on about straight white men and how awful straight white men are, straight white men are not going to be able to tell people that honestly we're not really that awful, because frankly, no one gives straight white men any kind of sympathy. And when women and, you know, damaged individuals like social justice warriors are screaming from the rooftops that, oh, so straight white men and the patriarchy are oppressing us, and then productive individuals who work hard and get something and achieve something by creating this, you know, in your case, creating a documentary, say, you know, and you might have all the facts, and they might be absolutely irrefutable, but it's still going to not sit well in people's minds, right?
Well, we will be a very small part of it.
Let me just finish my point, right? Because, and it, if I'm nothing else, I am a strategist. I'm a strategist. I am a tactician. I like this sort of thing. One of my favorite things is the history of war, and the history of war is effectively the history of politics. And I like seeing who wins, and I like seeing how they win. And I tell you how you win this right now, right? You approach Christina Summers to do all of your reading throughout the whole documentary. If you can get her doing that, you know, and explain to her that you might not be able to pay her. You know, I think that she might do this on principle. And if people support her joining this, you know, if you guys in the chat room now were to, like, just send her a polite email saying, hi, Christina, I don't know whether you've seen, or, you know, a tweet or something. Hi, Christina, or doctor, whatever she goes by. I don't know whether you've seen it, but these two guys are making a factual documentary based on all of the information about about the social justice warrior phenomenon in the gaming industry, and we know you've contributed to it. Your video has gone viral, effectively, hundreds of thousands of views. We would really like it if you'd like to contribute to this research, because she's a professor, she's perfect for it, and we'd like you to narrate it, and you know, star in it. She is unassailable from a normal person's point of view. She is so. So perfect for this, for you guys. You literally couldn't lose. I love Alessandra. And seriously,
you know what? You guys sent her emails because that's a brilliant idea.
I fucking know it's a brilliant idea. I hate to blow my own horn, but I fucking know it, mate. If there's one thing I can do, it's tactics.
I'm thinking from a production point of view.
You are. That's exactly the thing, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I do support what you're doing, but it's hard to get behind you because you are the guys they're criticizing, and the public will see that. That's all they'll see, you know? So seriously, Summers, if you can just ask her really politely, explain everything what you're doing, you know, ask her to contribute on the research if she wants to. Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
this is a little bit too brilliant. Can we delete this from the internet? I don't want to...
Seriously, guys, you know, spread the idea. Spread the idea. I'm not kidding. We can win this if we just act smart. We ignore our own egos, you know, that's the point. Ignore our own egos. Our egos are not the issue here. What is the issue is winning. You know, I want to win this fucking culture war. I really do. I don't want these fuckers taking over my hobby, taking over the world around me. And gaming is it. You know, I mean, that's why I do my YouTube channel. I do it because I want a voice in the public arena to say, look, these guys are full of shit. Don't listen to them, you know?
Yeah, seriously. And you know what? This is why I was talking about games and economics and Google search engines and all of this, is that these people are amazing and brilliant, and they are the hope for the future. And these are the fields that are being attacked by the social justice. And this is why this is so important. This is bigger than just video games and culture.
Exactly.
They're trying to destroy the most innovative and brilliant and positive and ethical fields out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kovcom said, you don't have to tell about the interview as the doc. No, don't lie to her, man. Don't lie to her. We are not like them, you know? And I think, and like you say, it's literally a larger issue that's being played out in microcosm here, you know? And we really have to, and I think Christina Summers really understands that. You know, I really think she does. And I think that's why she's making videos on the internet. She really wants to solve this problem. You know?
Yes, and when with the filming we're going to be doing, You know, here's a bit of like what I'm thinking from a production angle right now, because it is still speculative. At the funding level we're at, there's a lot of speculation. So we're actually going to be getting so much footage. We are going to get footage that can we can do so much with. You know, it's if Miss Summer says no, we'll have footage that we can do something else.
There are plenty of other people to approach. Like other people said, that guy T is a great guy to do it in. He did his latest video. He's wearing a suit and he's an intelligent young man. You know, he's the most respectable looking intelligent young man you've ever seen. You know, it's hard not to take him credibly, and he's only 19, 20. He's so young. It's crazy. He's such a responsible looking adult. You know, so there are if she says no, there are definitely other people, but she. Professor, feminist, woman, seriously, she's the silver bullet, if you can get it. And you know, I really recommend people asking her really politely. You know, she is a very respectable person. She is I've got so much respect for her, and I think a lot of other people do too. So, you know, I really do.
Guys, send her a message.
Yeah.
Seriously, that would be perfect.
Yeah, and then you guys can do the hard work, you can do the legwork, you can do the research. I'm sure she's got her own research that is just as valid and useful to you as well, that she'll be able to share with you just by sending you a few links. And it could be a relationship that really helps. And I really do agree that something has to be off the internet to be counted. That is true. You know, in the mainstream media narrative, if it's on the internet, then people don't care. You know, it's just a YouTube video, it's just a thing, you know. But if it's on, you know, a database in like a, you know, in a documentary list or a film list, then it's got a lot more weight.
Rachel's right. I just can't help being scary and badass looking.
Yeah, no, mate, that is exactly the problem that white men have. I'm not kidding. I get told that I'm really intimidating all the time, and I think, well, that's weird because I actually think I'm quite a nice guy. But you guys are a bunch of twats, so I can't help but be a twat back to you. And now I'm a bigger twat than you are because I'm scarier than you. You know, and that like when the social justice warriors are giving it, and it's just like, you know, it kind of pisses me off. It's not fair, but you know, there we go. And that's the thing, you know, mate, you're in the military. You know, you're confident, you're self-assured. You know what you're talking about. You've thought about your position, obviously for a long time before you've come to your position. You know, I mean, one of my favorite things that you say is about noblesse oblige. As a history guy, when you first said that, I was like, oh, love it. You know, you're right. It does pull upwards. That's why I am not against the monarchy in Britain. You know, I think the monarchy in Britain is still a good thing. And I don't even think it's about noblesse oblige anymore. For me, it's probably just nostalgia for history. But it's one of those concepts I find very cute.
Queen Lizzie was, when I first joined the army, we were on parade for her. For her, I don't even remember. But, she stood basically at attention for 45 minutes. And if you've ever stood at attention, like one of the guys, she was a little bit late to the traffic. He passed out briefly, almost fell on his bayonet. Yeah. Standing at attention is hard. It's really hard. And this woman is, what, 66.5? She stood there for 45 minutes just to honor one of her countries. So say what you will about the politics. She is a cool lady.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And she's beloved in Britain. Everyone thinks she's the tits, whether they're monarchist or not. You know, she's just been a good example of a queen. And so you can't, you know, you just can't, you can't refute that. Lord Sabre, nice one. Just make sure you guys are really nice and polite and welcoming. That's it. Rachel Edwards, if you wouldn't mind doing it, again, I hate to say it, coming, you know, it's coming from a woman, and it shouldn't make a difference, but these things do, you know? So if we can get lots of women asking her, that would really help. You know, like, get it on, like, Not Your Shield. You know, get it on hashtag Not Your Shield. So the people on there, and I hate.
Guys, don't phone her at home. Don't harass her at home at 3 a.m.
No, just tweet her and then she can pick it up later, you know. yeah, obviously, don't be like them, Jesus. But I hate that I have to say, look, straight white guys, you're actually a lot less useful in this situation because it's fucking racist, you know? But you've got to look at the facts of the matter, and these people have been demonizing straight white guys for 30 years. You know, it's straight white guys are just... It's hard to persuade people because of all the propaganda against straight white guys.
Well, so you know, it's the reverse. It's the reverse of what Justine was saying. Take it as a joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great point. I'm not offended. I'm not oppressed.
No, exactly. But the facts of the matter are just not in our favor at the moment. I'm a straight white guy. You know what I mean? I've got to say this. You know. So Rachel, if you'd appreciate, I'd really appreciate if you tweeted her, just asking, say, hey, this is a great idea. You know, or I think is a great idea. Do you wanna help out? Because, you know, there's no reason that we can't make this a team effort using the best we have on our side. You know, and Christina Summers is the best representative Gamergate or just the anti-feminist side could have. You know, it's just she's so great. And yeah,
well, the narration, we might be able to get a hold of Paglia, who is so big that all of her contact information is non-existent.
Sorry, who is that?
Camille Paglia.
I don't actually know who that is.
Oh, she is awesome. A friend of mine was just at a libertarian convention, mm-hmm. and so she was giving a speech at it, and she was talking about date rape, and she was saying, back when I was fighting for feminism, we were demanding the right to be date raped. we were demanding that we wouldn't... Like, we were fighting against being treated like children with our hand held. We wanted the right to go out and get blackout drunk and maybe get raped, you know? That's a free person. She is...
No, I completely agree. But yeah, get this on Not Your Shield. Get people of color and women saying, hey, we're gamers, we're really pissed off with the social justice warriors and Queen Anita scamming the crap out of everyone. Karen Strawn is another great person, but the problem with Karen Strawn is that she's an MRA, and that in itself is obviously not a problem for me.
Well,
but
she lives 3 hours from me, and I've never heard from her. So, I don't know. I'm kind of hurt, man. I'm kind of hurt.
I can understand it, you know. I'm still waiting for her to ask for a conversation with me, to be honest. I'd love to have her on. But the problem is she is a public MRA, and that's not a problem for us, obviously, but that's a problem that the mainstream media will make out. You know, that'll be a big deal that the mainstream media will make out. Christina Summers is a feminist.
The person that we are going to have on this is T.J. Sotomayor. Because, like, one of the aspects we're taking is the online harassment. And Sotomayor has actually had real harassment. You know, he has had pictures of guns tweeted to him. You know, I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but, you know, there's another example of one of the voices we're going to have on this.
Right, okay, that's great, because, you know, just as many, and I really hate saying as many non-white men as you can have, or non-white, non-male people, is great, because their entire argument is predicated on the idea of these people being victims, you know, and I'm not saying, I'm not saying we shouldn't allow MRAs, what I'm saying is MRAs will be a point of weakness that they can attack from, you know. It's not that MRAs are bad, it's that they have painted it in the public consciousness that MRAs are bad. You know,
I was actually going to be on a Voice for Men podcast a week ago. Like, neither myself nor Jordan were available at the time, unfortunately, but I would like to follow that up. I'm not sure who we could speak to in the MRAs. Like, I'm not sure how much the MRAs have to do with video games.
They've got a video game podcast.
That's what I'm not saying, there isn't.
They've got a video game podcast, and I'm thinking about going on it myself. I don't want people to think that I'm saying don't talk to MRAs. All I'm saying is I don't think Karen Strong would be the most optimal choice to front the video. That's so mean to say, because Karen Strong is an amazing speaker. She is absolutely amazing, but it's because of what she is that we shouldn't. You know, Christina Summers is a feminist. She has been a feminist probably her whole adult life. She is untouchable. There is nothing in the world that they could say that's going to bring her down, you know, in anyone else's mind. They're going to see her talking with, she's a professor, she's got the facts, she's a feminist, she's been called the factual feminist for ages since she came onto YouTube. She works for the American Enterprise Institute, which I assume is a fairly reputable thing, but it's why she works for them. And, I mean, she's working for them, so I'm quite, you know, already giving them the benefit of the doubt. She is unassailable, whereas Karen Strong's got a point of weakness that MRAs aren't well liked in the public consciousness. She's doing a great job changing the way people think of MRAs.
All of original
but it's not there. you know?
She's not a girl. She is actually creating original content.
A lot of honestly, I really got introduced to this side of thing. Just coming out of a bad relationship and finding her videos and realizing how much they spoke to me. You know, honestly, I owe her a debt of gratitude. I probably wouldn't be where I am now without her thing. Syrian Girl is a good fallback if Christina Summers won't do it. But seriously, your silver bullet is Christina Summers. And yeah, I really think that just, and as much, you know, input from Gamergate to her, from the Not Your Shield hashtag people to her would be fantastic. And yeah, Adam Baldwin would be great because he's a Hollywood celebrity. He's beloved. He's been in Firefly. He's been in Full Metal Jacket. Who, you know, he's been in so many films that are series that are just really, really well lauded, and he's a recognizable face for a lot of people. And so, yeah, there are a lot of people on this team that if you can get Christina Summers, you can get all of them. You know, you can get absolutely all of them. You know, Milo, I'm sure, is probably a good choice, assuming you make sure that he sticks very specifically on topic about what's happened and doesn't get a bit too right-wing. And I don't begrudge him for being right-wing, but it's about, you've really got to just think about the psychology of the people you're trying to persuade. You know, you can't come across as anything other than centrist. You know, that's it. You have to appear to be centrist. Stay away from Stefan Molyneux. Totally agree. Stay away from Stefan Molyneux. He's a sophist. I don't trust what he says. I think I'm actually going to do videos with him, because I listened to a podcast with him and Dan Carlin, and I tell you what, I love Dan Carlin so much. I sat through Stefan Molyneux to listen to just to what Dan Carlin was saying, and I might actually cut out the bits that Stefan Molyneux was saying and just make video responses, because he makes assumptions that sound reasonable and probably are true to an extent, but are completely reversed when you learn about the rest of what he's just missed out in that step. And it makes his point invalid, and it really bothers me. And I think it's only because I know history as well as I do that I can see these things and other people can't, because Stefan Molyneux also knows history very well. I think he just cherry-picks a lot. I would say, right, if I were going to give you some sort of perfect lineup, I would have Summers hosting it, you two doing all the research and the legwork, the stuff that nobody's going to thank you for, but the stuff that needs to be done, you know, the hard lifting that everyone needs to be done. And Summers will be in key in this as well. Yeah, get any celebrities you can get who are, you know, pretty decent, especially, you know, Adam Baldwin's got a great reputation. Who doesn't love Jane? Who doesn't love Jane, you know, from Firefly? And, you know, you can probably introduce him using a clip from Firefly or something like that, you know.
And, you know, as this builds, it opens up more doors, you know, yeah, and that's
absolutely
exactly what we're hoping to do.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what you have to do, but you have to think strategically. That's entirely been my purpose bringing you on, because I like the YouTube videos you do, and even though I don't agree with everything you say, you know, but I don't agree with everything anyone says. So
it's not supposed to be a monolith. It's supposed to be a conversation.
Exactly. It would be an echo chamber if we just all agreed with everything we all said, you know. So Summers doing the fronting and the research, as well as you two doing the research and the legwork, the unrewarding bit but the necessary bit, and then Adam Baldwin for some celebrity power. A few other people who are not on the internet. I know it's quite hard to. I mean, by this point it might be worth approaching someone like Penn and Teller or something like that. You know, if you can get all of these dominoes to fall into place. You know,
I am planning to move to Vegas in a couple of months.
I've seen these guys, you know, he's quite rational. And I know that, you know, people are very divided on whether they like him or not. But it's one of those people who will probably be on your side because they're rational thinking people. Even though you might not agree with their views, they do still think, you know, and they probably do have an opinion on this sort of thing. But yeah, Karen Strong, definitely have her as an interviewee. I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. Guys, in the comments, have you got any other ideas of who to approach if you can get the initial dominoes of Christina Summers and Adam Baldwin? If anyone in the comments, or if you've got any ideas, you know, I want to help. I really want to help, because it could be a really important cultural monolith. But we really have to be honest with ourselves about how we can make it as good as we can make it, you know?
Exactly. Like, believe me, the amount of editing work I'm committing myself to, it's gonna be hell.
this is why I'm thinking, because the thing is, I mean, you know, you guys, you're just two guys, you know. I know that that's, you've got a lot of work on. I know that you do. And so, you know, and there are so many people who really give a damn. I mean, the thing is about that guy, T, is that he's an internet guy. You know, Thunderfoot, yeah, I think he's already doing an interview with Thunderfoot, which is great, because Thunderfoot is a scientist. You know, he can literally come on and say, my name's Phil, I don't actually know his full name. You know, I work at, you know, I've done experiments at the Super Collider at CERN, or wherever he did his video doing his Super Collider, or his thing is. And you know, you can get some really respectable people on board if you've just got the right people to start with. And, you know, as much as I like Arini and Jordan Owen, and I do think that I do think that fundamentally they probably are both very, very nice guys. I don't know them, but from what I know of their videos, you know, I think they're probably very nice guys. And I think that it's something that's worth doing, because I think that they're right, that there needs to be some non-internet media out there that can be pointed to. I really do, you know. So yeah, guys, you've all got. I really think that. And, you know, no one wants to ask for help. That's the thing. No one. I would never want to ask for help. One of the things that. Well, one of the reasons.
Derek Miles just said the money is such a big roadblock. It really isn't. For 15 grand, we can do a proper documentary. We just really have to bust our humps.
Cooperation is the key.
That's not a lot of money. It really isn't. Given the number of people involved in all of this, like, if we're asking $1 a month from each person, $5 over 5 months, to try and defend video games that you probably spend a lot more than that on each month.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And so, yeah, I hate
the e-begging aspect, except what I'm doing is I'm begging you for $1 a month so that I can work 12 hours a day and, you know, like, be thinking about putting a gun to my head because I'm so sick of editing video.
Yeah, I just want to say to everyone, seriously, I know that it's a lot of research. I know it is. You know, it's a lot of reading, and it's shit reading, because a lot of the time you'll find yourself going down a dead end, and there was nothing there, and you're like, great, okay, nothing was there. I've got to go back to, you know, wherever I started, and then go down another road. So yeah, it's you know, I can completely agree that. You know, it was. I can completely believe that there is plenty of research, and just it is hard work. I swear to God, when I did the one about the playful is political, it took hours and hours. It probably took days, in fact, thinking about it, to do all of the research in not days, probably an entire day to do all of the research involved with just finding out who these people were and just showing why they're all interconnected. You know, and that wasn't even that big a deal. And so, but you've just got to read so much crap to get the actual, real, solid facts that you need. You know, the actual information that you need. And so, I can completely empathise with Davis's point. You know, it is a lot of work. It really is.
Well, that's the irony of social justice, is that, like I've said it before, 1 minute of Anita's videos takes 20 minutes to explain everything wrong with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And so, yeah, like a well-researched, well-presented, concise documentary.
Which is why that's not the right tactic. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be making videos on YouTube and whatnot, taking apart Anita's arguments, because that's educational.
Of course.
You learn, if you watch a video like that, you learn a lot about a lot of things. That's a wonderful, productive use of time. But for the documentary, it's not going to be about taking apart her arguments, but rather demonstrating that the arguments are coming from a dishonest place. Like, we're not going to completely ignore the arguments. Obviously we're not. But you need, like, a three-season... series to try and take the whole thing apart. It's going to be drawing attention to the pattern behind these people. Behind, like, Anita Sarkeesian, Zoe Quinn, so on and so on. Like, I don't need to tell you folks this. You know, it's the same thing over and over again. I'm a victim. You people are full of hate. Let me control everything and give me a paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that can all be... I think, in fact, Christina Summers is probably a great person to boil all that down. You know,
David's right. 1 minute of Anita's video takes about half a month to think up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but the thing is, you can refute what they say very quickly if you can write a concise narrative. And I think Christina Summers is actually also very good at creating a narrative. You know, so if you needed her to condense a lot of information down into a paragraph, I think she's capable of doing that. You know, she's a very well-educated lady, and I think that she's absolutely fine for doing that. You know.
I've studied rhetoric extensively, and I'm with Aristotle on it, that rhetoric is an art that deserves to exist for its own sake. It's not BS manipulation the way Plato described it.
Yeah,
it's
not
if it's coming from a true place, it's beautiful. And an example of my rhetorical flourish is about a month ago. You know, when this whole Gamergate started, there was a lot of hatred against me because the narrative from the social justice people was that I was racist, sexist, homophobic, etc. I managed to flip that around in a week, and the people calling me that are now the bullies. And I've managed to, like, coming from an extremely radical reactionary right position, which, as you guys know, does not mean that I hate people or I want to commit genocides or that I'm a Nazi, but that I just think, and I'm a historian, you know.
I find that people on the right are very much concerned about individual responsibility and morality, whereas people on the left are very much concerned with state responsibility. And
you know what? There's a lot of liberals out there who are concerned with individual responsibility. Not the leftists, but the leftists behind the movement, the leftists at the top of the movement, are not the movement itself.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's the people that are rabidly, almost devoted in a religious way, that believe in the authority. They do fundamentally believe that the authority, that truth comes from authority, and that really, really gets under my skin.
Yes. Yeah, well, again, it comes from authority because they don't believe truth is bigger than them.
They don't believe truth is objective. That's the problem.
The reason, and this is going into the philosophy of science, the reason that science developed out of Christianity is because Christianity has a God that doesn't fuck with you. God made the universe and said, this is the universe, these are the rules, no more floods, you know, figure out the rules. And so truth is bigger than the human. It's part of, like, Odin or Zeus, they change the rules whenever they feel like it. Whereas the Yahweh, the Christian God, doesn't change the rules. So truth is bigger than us. It doesn't come from people. It doesn't come from authority. Truth is truth.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess on that sort of note, we should probably leave it there, because it's 3:30 a.m. here. So, I really, really want to help, and I really think I can help. You know, I think I can give good advice, and I think I can give good advice because I've seen these kind of power struggles play out in history. You know, that you see them in every society all throughout history, and if you read enough of them, you know what good ideas tend to look like.
And you know when a cusp is coming, yes. And this right here is an opportunity to. This is the time. This is the place.
Yeah, it's an idea whose time has come. You know, so you have to do this as professionally and as selflessly as possible. You know, it's not about...
Believe me, ego is out the door. You know what? When I was filming Lust in the Time of Heartache, you could tell how impressed the martial artists were that it ended with me being murdered. That this was not an ego vanity project about what a badass I am. But it was actually a project using martial arts to tell a story. And so, yeah, you need to kill your ego if you're going to do anything worthwhile in this world.
Yeah, exactly. And that's honestly why I think that it would be better for what you're doing if you and Jordan weren't in the spotlight. You know, and no one's going to doubt your contributions or anything like that. But I think that we all agree it is bigger than you guys. You know, it's bigger than the guys funding it.
You know what? And if we can do that, bang! Like I'm going into this, we're going to be getting so much footage that we have options, right? Mm-hmm. That if we're desperate and we have to be in the documentary, then we're in the documentary. But if we can cut ourselves out, if we can get Christina Hoff Sommers doing the voice, have her the narrator of the whole thing, that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and if possible,
I completely agree. My only worry is the production angle. Like one more person to fly around with us everywhere and get video of.
Well, I mean, it is, but I think you'll get more backers on Patreon with her on board. You know, I think that there would be a lot of people who would really, really be interested in, you know, because it would literally be flying her to places so you guys can film her and she can interview the person that you need to interview, you know? And that would be an excellent way of doing it, I think. I really do. I think that they would have to attack your arguments, because attacking the person that is on the screen that everyone's going to see isn't going to work.
And you know what? She's somebody that would put herself out there for this as well.
Exactly. She's already a public figure, and she is just eminent, preeminent. You know, there is no attacking her. And no one cares about the people behind the camera, really, because, you know, people just care about the people they're looking at. And, you know, absolutely. And Lexi Mordino, I don't pussy out of things. So, yeah, I don't think Irini does, just from what I've...
I burned my chariot wheels long ago.
Yeah, exactly. We cast our lot in when we first started making videos, taking the piss out of these people and directly contradicting everything they say, you know. So, you know, there's no backing out. This is it for me, anyway. You know.
Victory or death, when Carrie Wellmori.
Yeah, I'm not living in the social justice world. I'm just not doing it. It's wrong. It's fundamentally wrong.
To go back to nerd for a moment, to quote Red Dwarf, better to live a day as a lion than a lifetime as a worm.
And what did Rimmer say to that?
Who ever heard of a worm skin rug?
I should have remembered that. I know that. God, I spent my teenage years watching Red Dwarf religiously. I love...
Yeah, Rimmer, I know. That's my favorite season. I know people don't like that season, but it's my favorite.
Which season was that?
Was it 5 or 6?
One to six were just the best. The whole thing was just consistently brilliant. You know, after that it went downhill a bit, but 1 to 6 were just amazing.
Did you know that Crichton actually had a Canadian accent? Like, that was intentionally a Canadian accent?
I actually didn't, but I was quite young when I was watching it, so... I'm going to look out for that next time I watch it.
A really interesting interview with the creators, with the one, it's an episode happening in an alternate reality, the one where they have Kat playing a priest. He was originally supposed to be a janitor, but it struck them that, like, for so long, they'd had this show with 2 white guys and 2 black guys in it, and you would have never thought of it that way until that episode. They were going to have Dave as a mechanic and the cat as a janitor, and all of a sudden they're like... oh, geez, suddenly this is feeling insensitive. And like that's the only time it came up. It's beautiful that they had these real characters that were not diversity quotients. They were just characters.
Yeah, just, I mean, it just didn't occur to me. I suppose Dave Lister isn't white, is he? It didn't really occur to me. He's English. You know, that's the thing. That's the thing in England.
I suppose. Working class English.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's really, English is not a race in any way. It's a state of mind. You know, I'm not kidding.
And, like, they are so stereotypical in a way. Like, Rimmer, like, the wishes he was in the nobility upper class. Crichton is, like, the servile British class. Dave Lister is the working class. And Kat is, like, the cool schnazzy but kind of dumb guy. You know, like, they're so stereotypical, but... they're well-rounded.
Yeah, absolutely. And but it's not just that. I've read all the books to them as well, and it's more that they are justified in what they are. You know, everything about Rimmer is all summed up when I can't remember what episode it was. It was one with the Inquisitor, where it's like, you know, justify yourself. And he's like, what else could I have become? And that is Rimmer. That is everything about Red Dwarf summed up. It's like, the characters are justified in what they are. I love Red Dwarf. They're so better than it looks.
Really human.
Yeah.
They are, like, it's so tragic and hilarious. It's a beautiful series.
Yeah. But anyway, really better call it a night there. But yes, thanks for coming on. I've had a really, really good time having a chat.
Absolute pleasure. Take care, my friend.
Absolutely. And guys, don't forget to spread the idea around if you like it, because I think that really good things can be done, and we should do that. Would you like to talk us out?
Well, you know what? It's really about, it is about getting the word. About, a lot of people are skeptical, and it's not wrong to be skeptical. But if you folks, if you believe in this, if you want to give us the shot, at least, of trying to do this, you know, getting the word out there is really the big thing. We're not asking for a huge, we don't want anybody to go hungry because of this, obviously. You know, it's a few bucks each, and we can get this thing made.